By their fruits ye shall know them. By their fruits. Fruits, you shall know them.
All right, welcome to By Their Fruits. This is a special episode. It's episode 50. We hit that milestone, John. How do you feel about that?
I'm glad to be here, Jeremy. You know, this is a special 50th anniversary show of By Their Fruits. Hopefully we'll have another 50 more to the 100th episode, which will be an even greater extravaganza at that point, where we're going to probably have 10 to 15 people on. But you know, it's good that we've at least God has allowed us to make it this far. So what can I say?
Yeah, man. I mean, it took a while, but that's life, bro. I'm excited because me and you have made this goal to be more consistent throughout this year, you know, God willing, obviously. But that's something me and you really want to focus on. We want to get more content out. We want to edify more people and kind of expand, you know, instead of being in this stagnant place. And episode 50 is a good start because we got all these awesome people here with us tonight, don't we?
Yes, so we're going to introduce, each person, so they can definitely, most of y'all probably have heard them. They've been guests on By Their Fruits, and hopefully they will continue to be guests on By Their Fruits. First in the top left corner is Turner from the All Out War podcast. How are you doing, Turner? Tell everybody out there, of course, you know, where the All Out War podcast is and how you're doing, brother.
Yeah,
hey, you're looking fresh, by the way, dude. Your beard,
yes,
it's making me jealous.
Thanks. Yeah, I get called Santa quite a bit. Congrats, guys, on 50. It's a milestone for real. I think I heard some stat somewhere that like there's like 100,000 podcasts that have like less than 5 episodes or something that are just floating around the internet. But so you've done well. And I enjoy your guys' stuff so much. And you guys are great friends. And John, you've been on our podcast a ton. So, and I met Jeremy through you. So I really appreciate you guys and what you do and your content. It's it helps me to not feel like we're out here on our own, you know, doing this stuff.
Yeah. Very much
together,
so.
Buddy.
It's yeah. It can be lonely. Next in the lower left, so we're going, I guess, counterclockwise, is Laura from Magical Mystery Church. It's great to have you back, Laura. All of us, you know, enjoy watching your YouTube channel. Of course, my ministry channel was axed from YouTube, so this is my second channel that has been struck down. Eventually, I don't want to say this, but eventually you'll have your first one taken down as well, too, eventually. So there'll be something that happens to all of us sometime when you're out there, discussing things that Satan and the world order doesn't want you to discuss, when you're trying to shine light on the powers of principalities and the darkness, especially behind New Age movements and New Apostolic Reformation. But welcome back to By Their Fruits.
Thank you, John. I'm really happy to be here. Thank you guys for having me on. I feel like one of the cool kids or something. I can't even believe I'm here. It's like, wow.
We're just people. We're just people.
I know. I know.
Yeah, it's an honor to have you here.
Yes. And then, of course, to your right, one of my dear friends, Aaron Falkman from Underground Publishing, who we've had on before. And I want to direct everybody to his YouTube channel. And I think you did lose a YouTube channel once in the past, right? You're part of that club, aren't you? Or am I mistaken?
I got axed for comparing the COVID virus and the UFO disclosures to the movie War of the Worlds. That got pretty quick.
So hey, you're part of the club. Okay. Yeah. So we both lost channels, you know. And I want to direct everybody to your YouTube channel as well, Underground Publishing. I want to thank, you know, for the content that you put out, as well as your book on the Revelation too, as well, Every Eye Shall See Him, which I own a copy, as well, of anybody who wants to read an excellent book covering pre-millennial, mid-tribulation, rapture eschatology, which a lot of the same views that I hold myself. I'm moving now more towards the mid-trib position because of you, Aaron. And I wanted, you know, to thank you for that. Of course, all glory to God. I especially the troubled times that we are facing, and people want to realize exactly that we are living in the Church of Laodicea, and how bad it is right now. Should definitely pick up a copy of your book. It's on Amazon. I can't recommend it enough. I usually have my copy here on my desk, and I would show off in the camera, but I let one of my students at school borrow it, who is almost done with it. But anyway, this evening, what we've decided to discuss is current events in the light of what is to come, or what we believe is to come, and why eschatology matters. Now, all of us here are premillennial believers. We may have a difference in the rapture. Turner is pre-trib. Jeremy, I would assume you're still post-trib, pre-wrath, quote unquote, right? I would assume.
For tonight, yeah. I'll hear what Aaron
Okay.
has to say.
And Laura, where are you?
I'm probably kind of where you are, because I used to only know pre-trib. That's like all I ever even heard. I was shocked there were so many other tribs. And but I started going towards like def a lot. It was kind of like, it's kind of like, well, if you're not pre-trib, you must be pre-wrath, kind of. I kind of forgot about mid. My mom was always like, she was mid-trib, and she was like, no. So I'm kind of leaning, I mean, because I do have listened to a lot of Aaron's, almost all of his videos.
So have
And really,
I. Yeah, I was just like, I've listened to almost every All Out War podcast as well. I'm very ashamed to admit how much media I consume, but there we are. So.
I guess I'm probably leaning towards mid. I would say I can't argue with it, because I just have to take the time to make sure I'm totally understanding it. But it really de definitely seems like it makes the most sense, and it has so many more scriptural supports than I realized before.
Well, like we were talking about before the show, well, for me, now that, I've heard Aaron speak before we started recording, is that to me, like, mid-trib doesn't even make sense unless you break down the two tribulation parts. You know, as you were explaining before, which we'll get into, I'm assuming, but that's what I wanted to say. Without that, mid-trib doesn't make any sense, in my opinion. But when you add that and include that, it makes plenty of sense.
Maybe when, like, before we're done with this broadcast, we can just have you guys, since you got me here, is just give me your biggest question for mid-trib. If I don't have an answer for it, then I need to do more research and study.
That sounds good. So, as far as what
Fair
we
enough.
see right now in the world is at hand, something that we discuss off air is, unless people are being watchmen on the wall, the born again Christians that are looking out for the world events, and is also looking out for the second coming of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, right? Many people that we talk with in our everyday life, even some Christians who are not doing their duties and have fallen to the wayside, that eschatology really does not matter. They're not really paying attention to what is happening over in Israel. They're not really paying attention to what's happening in Ukraine, Ukraine-Russian war. They're not paying attention to what's happening between Armenia and Azerbaijan. They're not paying attention. I mean, like, how many, like, rumors,
Taiwan and
wars,
China, like, there's a whole
wars and
lot.
rumors of war. Like, how many more can I add to this? Okay, before people start paying attention. All right. And I understand it's quite difficult to pay attention to this all the time, because as we're going through the quote unquote Great Reset, and the economy is not that great in America, and it's going to continue to get worse, it can be quite difficult sometimes. So your mind shifts to more worldly things, like survival, for example, which I understand that, but we are supposed to rely on the Lord. And so, it's going to continue. I saw, it's something I want to discuss with all of y'all. And it's something that Aaron has brought to my attention, and something that I do believe to be true, is Israel has threatened that they're going to have to invade Lebanon. Lebanon struck last week Tel Aviv with a multi-faceted rocket attack. Okay, and Tel Aviv, you have Jerusalem and you have Tel Aviv, but Tel Aviv is equivalent in some ways to the Israeli government, to be very similar to Washington, D.C., okay, in a lot of ways, okay. And so now they have to go come against Hezbollah, and they have to invade Lebanon is the position that they are broadcasting to the world. Okay, now Lebanon has a pretty strong Christian population compared to other countries in the Middle East, which is a very interesting discussion as well. And we know that the Palestinian Christians in the Gaza Strip are begging the world, especially Christian organizations, to get them out, because when they are driven south, I don't believe to Egypt, I believe to Saudi Arabia for slave labor, for NEOM, as Aaron has mentioned, and we'll discuss that in his videos. That it's sad that it doesn't seem like, it seems like this is something that is going to happen, because they are concerned that if they're driven into the hands of the Arabs, the Arab Muslims, they're going to be killed. Okay, they fear the Israelis, but they also fear the Arab Muslims as well too, the Palestinian Christians that are on the Gaza Strip. So it's interesting to see how all this plays out, and eventually Damascus, tragically, will be completely destroyed eventually, which is something that looks like it is going to occur when you have, discussions of such, both from Israel, the United States, and Russia coming to Syria's defense, as they have somewhat with Bashar al-Assad. So this war, I know a lot of people have fatigue. This war really hasn't even gotten started in a lot of ways.
Right. It's just growing.
And I don't think it's going to stop anytime soon, right?
No, I think what we're seeing is going to probably expand through the end of the decade, and it's going to get nuclear. That's been my prediction. But I think what's astounding is how just exactly what the scriptures are saying. Because again, I don't know if all of you guys have read my book, but my original theories about the Gog Magog, I wrote in 2006, and I discussed Russia invading Ukraine and Georgia, forming a land bridge with Iran to invade Syria, which none of that had happened yet. I really wasn't getting into the details of, for instance, Joel 3 and what it talks about, basically taking the people of the Gaza Strip and southern Lebanon and selling them to the Sabaeans. And just as we were talking here, this is interesting. The Sabaean kingdom, if you just pull up a map of it on history and overlay it on a map of where the Houthi rebels are, it's an exact match.
Wow, okay, that's interesting.
Yeah, so I'm wondering if it's almost going to be something like, we're just going to be, you see this happening in like El Salvador. Have you guys followed this prison camp in El Salvador? All these MS-13 and these massive gang prisons in El Salvador, these guys all started in the US. They were in LA and they basically shipped them out. And it's almost like they let them in. They don't have access to jobs, so they become gangs here and then they organize and then they send them back. And it's almost like I could see them just going, you know what? We're just going to turn Yemen into a big prison camp for gangs and terrorists. And the ones that behave themselves can come out and work in NEOM because they've got housing and whatnot there. But that's going to just basically be like going from, the supermax prison where you're going to get yourself killed to, the prison where you're, at least you've got a roof over your head and you'll never escape unless you want to run through the desert and die. But the point is like you can be a good drone worker here now for NEOM. At the end of the day, NEOM needs a massive workforce. And I don't, I think a lot of people, I mean, your average person, when I tell them about NEOM, they've never heard of it. And I'm sitting here going, they've been talking about this since 2018.
Well, it's a complete integrated smart city, right? You have Peter Thiel funding it, you have Anderson and Horowitz funding it, so you have kind of the amalgamation of transhumanism in a Muslim land, but it's not subjected to Islamic law, right, Aaron, or am I mistaken by that?
Well, so no, so NEOM is not going to be under Sharia law. What it is it's going to be more like a Singapore or a Hong Kong, where it's like
Special dedicated zone.
special dedicated zone, special interests and stuff like this. Well, the big thing, and this is huge, I thought it was the Winter Olympics. It's not. It's the 2029 Asian Winter Games are scheduled to be held on Mount Sinai. This Trojena
Wow.
project is NEOM's project to basically turn Mount Sinai into a ski resort. And I don't know how they have committed to get it icy, because I mean, it's hot even up there in high elevations. You can pull stuff like that off.
Major cloud seeding, like weapon warfare. I got no answers, you know?
Saudi Arabia's money, dude.
This is scheduled though, and I'm going, well, but if you can create snowy mountain caps there, you can create rivers, right?
Yeah.
Eventually.
Well,
And
there's a massive river. I think it's a River Dan that comes right out of there, isn't there?
I don't know. I haven't studied the topography. I just assume it's mountainous desert, but if you know something, go ahead and chime in.
I could be wrong. I think I was over there in 2014 or 2015, and we went out that way. But my question is like, with this line that they're building, the NEOM, it's called the line, right?
Yeah,
Isn't it?
yeah.
Okay. What's like BlackRock and some of these companies? What's their involvement?
So I've been trying to investigate that. They actually, I'm hoping to connect with a guy, but I actually applied for a recruiter job at NEOM just so I could talk to somebody. I didn't get picked up for it, but there's a guy who's here in Phoenix or who's from here who did. And
Okay.
I connected with him on LinkedIn, and I'm going to talk to him when he gets back, because I mean, based on what I see with NEOM and with Saudi Arabia and all this stuff, you apply for some really high level background screening, which I'm sure I've got quickly kicked out, right? But essentially, I've got like 20,000 LinkedIn connections for my recruiting work, and this guy said next time he's in town. I was supposed to catch him around Thanksgiving, but I was gone. But he said one of these times he's in town, he'll try to connect with me. But I want to hear about what they're building. I know just based on what they're advertising, they're building, I think, like five zones, and the line is just one of them. Trojena, which is basically on Mount Sinai, is another one. They're also building like an aquatic res massive resort. I mean, they've already got an international airport there. They've already got a university there, and
That's
then
crazy.
the Octagon is, or Oxagon, I think it's called,
Yeah.
is basically like a floating. And this is really important, because there's prophecies in Isaiah about Mystery Babylon falling into the sea, and about being seen from the Red Sea, and about being on the mountains and in the desert, in the
Yeah,
wilderness.
your theory about when it's repeated that Babylon has fallen twice.
Right.
That Jerusalem and Neon both could be Mystery Babylon. So when it's repeated, Mystery Babylon has fallen.
Yeah.
That's interesting. That is an
Well,
interesting theory. That
and
is
I
for
just
sure.
explained what I explained in my book before there was a NEOM. And one of my friends came up to me, and he was just like, "Have you heard about this NEOM? It sounds exactly like what you're describing." And we just started reading on it. And of course, all I knew about that zone was like, "Oh yeah, that's where the real biblical Mount Sinai is." And then I start looking at it and I'm going, "Oh, there's a lot of pieces that would come together." And of course, if you've got this massive industrial park, fully automated, powered by, I mean, Tesla level technology, right?
True, yeah.
And not to mention Elon Musk is now talking about building Tesla plants in Turkey, which is
Well, I
the
mean, that's who it's all funded by. It's funded by Andreessen Horowitz and Peter Thiel and Musk. I mean, I literally have the funding for NEOM that they signed contracts with back in 2016, 17 with the House of Saud.
Right. And so that this is another piece I just learned today or yesterday. Apparently, some of the impetus on the timing for the attacks on Israel and galvanizing the Arab world against Israel again was because Turkey was starting to shift their interest towards Israel, which was, I said, like the three main players are going to be Turkey, Saudi Arabia, and Israel. And of course, Turkey's always talking crap about Israel because they need to, because they're really the last seat of power for a united caliphate, right? They want to be that again. But if the broader, Arab caliphate turns towards, Israel, which it looks like that shift is going to occur pretty much immediately after, I think the King of Saudi Arabia dies. I think you're going to see that. And it's going to come out of a context of, World War III, I believe. And the way I predicted this, and this is actually years ago when I started, like kind of meditating in the whole wars and rumors of war statement. I said, I think that, people said, "Oh, rumors of wars could be clandestine operations, blah, blah, blah." I said, "I think they're literally rumors of wars, because there's wars going on, but they're not going to be reported on, and travel is going to be so restricted
Yeah.
that most people aren't going to know, oh yeah, they're like, like most people don't realize that like all the indigenous peoples who are near and around Neom, they forcefully evicted them. So if you think the Saudi Arabians are really going to have a problem with Israel doing that with the Lebanese and the Palestinians when it's going to gain them a workforce, it's like we all know that like no matter what they say about Israel on the surface, the Saudi Arab the Arabs are playing ball with Israel. They have been for a while. And obviously they have a really clear common interest in the in you know teaming up against Iran. If the US diminishes the power, which I foresee happening in World War III, they need to team up. They have to team up. They don't have a choice. And they need an industrial partner that could, you know, produce for them like the US produces weapons and stuff for them. And that's right there in Turkey. They've got an auto industry, they've got, you know, an air industry. They've got all the ingredients they need. They've got a prime shipping point, right? Those three countries could get together, and if their interests are very diverse right now, but if it became like a NATO of the Middle East, which they've been talking about creating, there's your beast kingdom, like right away. It's there, right? And then of course that creates the impetus for the Antichrist to take over everything around that while leaving Jordan and Saudi Arabia and those guys alone because they're
You know what
partners.
the buzzword is for it, right? If
Hmm.
you don't accept the transhumanist kingdom, you're not a techno-optimist. That's what they're calling is techno-optimism.
Right, which is basically millennialism for secularists.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much. And it's they talk about building a better kingdom, like for the future. They write, "Where did we come from? So remember your past." It's very common in New Age thought, right, Laura? Our
Yeah.
civilization was built on a spirit of discovery, of exploration, of industrialization. Where are we going? What world are we building for our children and their children and their children? A world of fear, guilt, and resentment, a world of ambition, abundance, and adventure. We owe the past and the future. It's time to be a techno-optimist. It's time to build. And again, it's the same belief of is we can prevent Armageddon.
Which is post-millennialism all over it. I mean, like when you realize how the Puritans shifted to post-millennialism, then quickly just went away from gospel centrist. I mean, they were never really evangelical, right? But they were about like, you know, crushing the world and making them all submit to a form of Christianity. And then they started shifting their interest towards positive progressivism, right? Like that went strong until
Social gospel.
right, social gospel, we're going to change the world, solve all the social ills. And they very much got, you know, jumped into the modernist thinking, the psychology, the eugenics was part of that, right? Like we're going to, you know, we're going to figure out how to quit, keep these inferior genetics from breeding. And of course, they adopted evolution, theistic evolution. And of course, once you start adopting evolution, you're right on the doorstep of eugenics. Well, then it makes sense if we can, you know, do this process smart, you know, let's figure out who can breed and who can't, right? And they did. I mean, it didn't take them long to do that. And most people don't realize that was not that long ago. And the fundamental institutions that push that are still in play. They've just changed their rhetoric for public perception or perception because Nazism was kind of unpopular, you know? But I mean, that was the outcome, right? And I have suggested for a while that what you're going to see is an international multicolor Nazism. It's going to come back in a global scale. And, you know, then I watched Captain America Civil War and I was like, I think they're predictive programming that quite a
Just a
bit.
little bit, just a little bit.
Just a little bit. But, you know, you got to get your super soldiers, right? I mean, that's who saves the day.
Well, yeah, that's part of the whole World Economic Forum through the 2030 agenda anyway. This whole the line, I think it was you, Miles, that talked about BlackRock. Were you asking about BlackRock? Yeah, so BlackRock invested at least so far $50 billion into the infrastructure of the line. And I think like 200 billion in general just in that region to build the infrastructure of Saudi Arabia. And what's whack is the headquarters not only is it in New York, but you also they have a major headquarters for the Middle East at least in Israel.
So does
So
Palantir. So does Palantir. They
does
celebrated it
Palantir.
this year. They celebrated it this year,
Exactly.
yeah.
So while that's going on, while these same people are investing over here for this other agenda, and it kind of seems like in general the world is just a stage, man. Like even though it seems like they're all against each other at the same time, They're all working towards
Well,
this
the New
common
Agers call that
goal.
synergism, Jeremy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or that some people, you know, will say, like, I don't like this term at all, but black hats and white hats kind of thing. It's like they have the same end goal, but they're just going at it like with two different angles. There's always a good guy and a bad guy type of thing, you know? But that's what I'm saying is, like, in the end, this whole 2030 agenda and the World Economic Forum and all these partnerships that are coming together, the conglomerate at these meetings and what they're doing to set up this new utopia, right? Are the same people that are fighting each other. You
Well, their
see,
governments
so it's like,
aren't, though. It's I mean, we tend to look at things like, this country is fighting that country, but the reality is like it's like us in Afghanistan, right? Where most Americans
yeah.
need to be in Afghanistan, right? And I think we've all underestimated the youth and how programmed they are by the internet now, Like
Oh, yeah.
I talked to I would guess she was probably 20, 21, just a girl at the coffee shop the other day who was a Christian. And she's just explaining quantum physics and quantum computing to me like it's nothing. Like, and I'm just like, I mean,
Being pro for it,
That's
right?
impressive. I mean, I'm reasonably technologically savvy in terms of just, the language and understanding concepts. Obviously, I'm not a physicist or anything, but I talk to a lot of technical people, and I'm fairly well read and fairly articulate. And so I just literally was just like, just taking a break from my work, and I'm always just like talking to whoever's around me when I'm doing that. And next thing you know, she's like, I'm just like, can you like explain quantum computing to me? And she's just laying it out there. And I'm just like, so it's like basically the difference between Morse code and DNA code. She's like, yeah, conceptually, yeah. And like, and she was good at it. And I mean, like, I talk to young people like that. And of course, most of them, they don't even bother talking with us because they're, the world again, I'm Generation X, so this is generation, I would guess this girl would be Z, right?
She
Because
would be Z, yeah. Even they don't even want to talk to us millennials either.
No, I mean, if you're under high school age, you think we're all insane, right? But if you're like college age right now, you understand we control the dollars and the purse strings of stuff, and so that's where you got to get the jobs. But it's almost like they're so much smarter than us, and they're not even like arrogant about it because they just are, right? And then the generation below them are just like, your generation's insane. Like, you guys think the world's gonna end. You guys think blah, blah, blah. And to them, it's just like the techno-fascist optimism is just a given. It's like evolution,
Well, you
so,
got on
right?
it's exactly what you're saying. Your generation, I'm Generation Z as well. So I have the luxury of
You mean
growing up.
Generation X?
I'm sorry. Yeah. No, I have a Z.
Generation
Yeah,
Z, you need to get some of that just for men, man.
I know, right? But I'm Generation X. I have the luxury of growing up with no cell phone, no, I remember getting the Atari, 2600.
Last generation to drink out of a hose, Turner. Is that what you're gonna tell me,
Heck yeah,
Dax?
man. We didn't wear
Hey, I
seatbelts,
was there.
man.
I was there.
Hey, look,
What?
I'll shock you. I will shock you. I remember my dad drinking a beer, driving. My parents owned a marina when I was growing up, and my dad would drink a beer on the way home, and it was not illegal. That's crazy. But as far as it goes for me, like techno optimism, I can't even get my email to work right. So, and as far as I'm concerned, an EMP is going to take that optimism right away in a second. There's no techno for anything once the power's gone.
Well, and that seems to be a big threat, but I don't think anyone's dumb enough to wreck the infrastructure like that. One,
Yeah, I
like,
go back and forth in that. It's like, is that something that they're pushing? Like, you see, like, the Obama, like, kind of like Hartlet, world order kind of, like you mentioned the World Economic Forum earlier, which the techno optimism side is World Future Society, and the WEF and the WFFS come together through synergism for their accomplished goals. Because you have BlackRock, which is WEF, which is the, Hartlet side funding the line, but then you have Anderson Horowitz, who literally wrote the Techno Optimist Manifesto. Mark Anderson did, and Peter Thiel, who are obviously working for the B system to come. They're funding it too, right? And so they're coming together because, again, with the EMP, maybe okay. I'll say this: there might be pockets of the world that get hit by very targeted EMP. devices, right? But an EMP device that destroys all technology as far as like all the satellites up in space and
No.
nothing functions anymore at all.
Oh, no.
The way I look
All
at it now is the same as the threat of a nuclear annihilation that destroys the world completely.
right.
I think both of them are elite con jobs, in my opinion.
Well, I mean, Aaron, you remember the 80s? We were always afraid the Russians were going to nuke us. And remember that movie, The Day After?
I remember. So for me,
Yeah.
it was what was Red Dawn, the original, right?
Yeah. Oh, love that movie.
But I don't
Fantastic.
remember feeling a conscious fear of the Soviets.
It
But
was Y2K for me.
again, I was like in sixth grade when the Cold War really ended. And I think I was like in seventh grade when we did Desert Storm.
Yeah, you're a young Xer then.
So I think the stress of it was like late 70s, early 80s, because that's when they were using it to manipulate the Americans the most, I think.
Jeremy, was it 2012 for you, since you're a late millennial? It was Y2K for me. So was it
Yeah, it's 2012.
2020? Yeah. What about for you, Laura?
I might be a boomer. You
Okay.
really a boomer? What's the what is the cutoff?
I think the cutoff is 1965, I think is the beginning of Gen X,
I
if I'm
was born
wrong.
in 64, so
Okay, yeah,
I
you're
okay. So for you, what
I'm
was
a
your fear?
boomer.
Nuclear annihilation?
Well, yeah, like growing up, still like in the 70s, yeah, I mean, we didn't have like get duck and cover, get under your desk and stuff like that, but we were always
Yeah, you're a boomer, 1964.
yeah, I'm a boomer. Oh man.
You have all the
So
money, so
I
you're
always thought I was. It wasn't like a bad thing until nowadays. But well, until I
Okay,
got old.
boomer.
Yeah, okay, boomer. I know I can say that. I'm millennial. Gen X, you can't say
And
that.
I live in Pittsburgh, and I remember my sixth grade teacher told us that Russia had like the top three cities that they would bomb first would be like Washington, D.C., New York, and then Pittsburgh. So we were always like, ah, we're so
Yeah.
important.
So, oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, so for me, yeah, we definitely had so like Y2K, I had like four kids, it wasn't like my what your first realization or whatever.
Right.
What were you, is that what
Yeah,
you
it's like when you think the world would end, right? Because I remember my dad just laughing because he was a born again Christian, right? And
Yeah.
now he was pre-tribulational rapture, but he was laughing. He was like, that what? Because Y2K is not going to end everything, you know? And I wasn't born again at the time. I was raised in the church thinking I was a Christian, but you know, and it, but not, you know, I guess at the time, I don't know, I go back and forth on it. But anyway.
You know how bad the Y2K propaganda was, though? Like, I remember news reports where they were like, oh, yeah, we're at the DMV and it's printing out horseless carriage things. And it's like, you didn't freaking have a DMV or printing out anything back then. What are you
Well,
talking
Alex Jones was pushing, and Bill
about?
Cooper co rightfully called him out. Alex Jones was like, here, folks, like, we're getting nuked. Okay, I'm hearing that, like, the Russia missiles went off because of the computers, folks. Okay, and, like, how could he blatantly lie? Like, anybody who follows Alex Jones
That
now,
was just a money-making
that
ploy.
it was. He claims, and I quote, well, my sponsors wanted to sell survival kits, and that's why I did it. Oh, bull. Right, Alex Jones. It's just like, it's so silly. It's
No,
so silly.
I think the EMP thing, I don't think it's ever going to happen, and here's why. I think there's such a demographic problem across the world in general, right? Even in your, I mean, even if your country is like India. Your average person, like I know like one person in India with like three kids. Most of them have like one or two kids, maybe three, right? But that's India, and they don't have any kind of child restriction laws. China has child restriction laws, and then most of Europe and America are not at a replenishment level, right? Russians definitely aren't, right? So the most popular,
Japanese definitely are not. They're
the
far more than any
majority
other
of
nation.
population growth is coming out of Latin America and Africa in the world, right?
And they want to stop that for sure.
Yeah, they don't want that. They don't want all these brown people like, coming up. And the generation below us, I mean, that's how we can that's how the powers that be control that generation is they are born cradle to grave addicted to technology,
That's
right?
true, yeah.
Yeah.
One is they would crap themselves. Two is like the kind of leadership, I mean, can you imagine if just like Mexican gangs just started pouring in, like how quickly our youth would roll over to like even among the people who are like gun culture and self-defense oriented and stuff like that, they've never been in a fist fight. I mean, a real like back
Right.
in the 80s and 90s, people still got into
That is true.
it
My
was like a
father-in-law
rite
speaks
of
about it all
passage
the
to
time.
get in a fist fight in school, right? With everyone screaming and like it was the
Well, people
thing.
get fist fights in parking lots over stuff,
Over
you
nothing,
know?
over dumb stuff. It was like that guy stepped on my shoe. That guy cut off my mom in traffic. And I just remember, well, we're gonna go fight and we're gonna punch each other in the face until someone's bloody or knocked out. And it was just like it was like the classroom freaking sweetheart prom queen would be there to watch and screaming, like that was just
The
the
way
way.
you gain respect.
Right, that was just it. That was just how you kind of made a name for yourself, was part of the social pecking order. They don't have that now. Now they have safe spaces and like trigger words and stuff.
No, it's Fortnite. Once you rule on Fortnite, that's your
Yeah.
bragging rights.
Gotta
And
be
you
a
talk
TikTok
so, but
influencer.
you talk so much crap too. They're taught
I
to
know.
talk crap and then not be able to back it up at all.
That is true. I
Yeah.
see it in the kids that I teach in the TikTok generation of Gen Z, where they talk so much garbage. And I teach at a Christian
It's
school. Now,
bad.
granted,
Yeah.
very few born again kids are actually at that school, no matter how much, God's using me to preach the gospel to them. It's tough because through the CMP voucher programs, which I'm not necessarily against this, kids that have gotten kicked out of public schools are shunted into the Christian school through government grant programs. Okay. And so you can just see that the TikTok generation, one, yes, they are more intelligent to a degree, but
I'm saying
they're
information-wise,
well,
not
information wise, their access to it, yes. But as far as their application ability of being able to apply it outside of fine motor skills is zero. Their
Right.
memory, literally, it's like a goldfish. Like it's like because of how TikTok is with a few, 15, 30-second videos, it's like their mind is programmed that the moment you say something to them, it goes in one ear and out the other. All
Right.
right. And so you can see that in the way that they treat each other, where they talk endless amounts of crap to each other, but nothing. There's never a point it reaches where and I'm not necessarily advocating for this, but it never reaches a point where, hey, meet me outside. We're gonna settle this.
Yeah, no. I think what's going to happen is they're probably going to foe a not an EMP or some kind of blackout, and I think it's going to so there's this guy named Stuart something, and I can't remember his name. Yeah, you guys know that show The Prophecy Club?
Yes.
So there's this guy who he was a former Catholic who got evangelical born again, and he had this prophetic dream or whatever. And I listened to this. My friend showed it to me last summer, and it was awfully on point with some of the stuff I predicted just by studying the prophecies. And he talks about like there being this 10-day blackout, and it just is so bad, and people are so freaked out from just 10 days of it. When the lights come back on, they're just going to line up and do whatever the government tells them.
Yeah, that's within the QAnon. They call it the 10 days of darkness.
Well, yeah, because you don't you, I mean, the reality is like, okay, I grab a few extra things and I've got a roommate here. We'd survive for 10 days. We wouldn't survive for 90 days, and that's assuming we can get water without electricity because we're in
Right.
Arizona, right? And there's millions here. So there's things like that that would just absolutely like freak people out. And then they're pulling in all these illegals who I'm sure many of them are gang members or don't have any means to, get a legitimate job, right? And once that starts going well, but one of my friends actually brought this up years ago, and he said, one of my friends said, me and every he's probably close to 30 now. He said, me and all my friends were addicted on porn at age 12. And then he and another
Yeah.
of my friends who's probably in
Yep.
his early 30s now said, you take away the internet from these people, he's like, you're gonna have people getting raped left and right because these people have been addicted to porn. And like I've worked through that kind of addiction years and years ago because it was like I didn't grow up with it, but
There's
surprise me.
people that post on Reddit threatening stuff like that, like
Well,
literally.
yeah, well, you're hearing about people in the metaverse and how like people are getting on there and girls are getting gang raped on the metaverse now. I
Yeah.
mean, it's what's in
Bound
the
to happen.
It's what's in their hearts, it's what they want to do. But if you have that kind of
Right.
addiction
Yeah.
going on, you won't be able to sleep until you get your fix, right? And I don't know if that would happen in 10 days, but the threat of that kind of thing is going to freak people out. And there's just so many things like that going on that it's like, one is, I think World War III is going to be largely staged. Largely, I think it is right now. I think everything since 9/11, I have a hard time believing that there's just like, I mean, I'm sure there, at the lower levels, there are people who are joining thinking they're fighting the big bad, right?
Yeah.
But the most of what goes on, I think, in terms of terrorist groups and gangs and stuff like that at a big level is allowed to happen. It's like you
Of
don't let
course.
like 70,000 people organize in a gang without going, oh yeah, we better do something about this now,
Well, they're going to make up the UN army.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, look at Hamas. Who created Hamas? Israel.
That's true, yes. Oh,
I've
CIA
heard that Israel
created Hamas.
created Hamas, but I where do what does that theory trace to? Like, what's the raw data?
I'd have to bring it up. I've seen the original. Let me look it up real quick. Go ahead and talk, Jeremy.
Is that the
Well, I was
same?
going to say it was. What's that? You can go
I
on,
was
Miles.
gonna, is that the same theory that in the same way, like you mentioned Afghanistan, like we started off, we were arming the Afghanistan's the Afghanis because they were fighting the Russians, and then we go to war with them,
Yeah.
and then now we're arming them again,
It's the
and
same with it's same with that
it's like creating ISIS. Yeah.
with the takeover of Gaza after the 1967 war with Egypt, Israel tolerated and at times encouraged and armed Islamic activists and groups as a counterweight to the secular nationalists of the PLO and its dominant faction, Fatah. So it was because and then so it was kind of like we kind of did with Al Qaeda, right? Where we armed them against Russia, and then later, it became a problem.
Yeah, I think what it is we create these groups to do our bidding. We promise them these, we arm them, we give them money, we fund them. And then they know that we can take them out whenever we want to. So they may be like, there may be free radicals there, but look what just happened in, what was it, Iran, that who took credit for that bombing?
Which
There was a bombing in Iran the other day.
you talk about at the Soleimani celebration.
Yes. And that's one of those things where we used, well, I think it was ISIS that took,
It's ISIS,
I mean,
yeah.
we haven't heard ISIS forever, but ISIS took responsibility for that happening. And I guarantee you the United States funded them to do that because we have this thing with
One
Iran right
thousand
now,
percent
right?
likely, yes.
Yeah. I mean, we have this thing with Iran. So it's like we create all these radical groups over there so that we like if it was America that went and just over we bombed them and we took responsibility, instant World War
There are
III, right?
proxies.
So yeah, proxies, that's the word I'm looking for. We have a bunch of proxies over there so that we have the ability to maintain some kind of control over what happens. You know what I mean? And to lead the Middle East into the direction that we want them to go. They may resist, but guess what happens when they resist? We can use one of those
They become the
proxies to
enemy at that
coalesce them.
point. Yep.
Right. Exactly. And then that doesn't fall directly back on the United States, at least in the public eye. But I mean, obviously, if you know who created and funded these groups, like the CIA, Mossad, multiple groups that all had a part in funding these proxies, we know that they did that. So we know that in general, it's our responsibility and it should fall on us,
Yeah,
But to the
I
public
mean,
eye, it doesn't.
I'm sure we're not exclusively doing that. I mean, I think other people are, play that game. It's a
Oh,
chess
very
game.
much so. Almost every country does.
But
Oh,
yeah,
yeah. No. It's not just us. I just, using that as a recent example.
I know
We
for
created
certain
ISIS. ISIS
the
did
armed
this.
ISIS theory.
Israel creates Hamas. Hamas is doing this. Like,
Yeah,
I mean,
I agree.
honestly, if Israel really wanted to, dude. They're one of the most technologically advanced nations on the planet. They could have taken out, they have so much data. They have all the resources to easily know every single thing that they're doing whenever they want.
Yeah, but they had $100 drones that were dropping firecrackers on all their sensors in coordination, so they completely got shut down.
Right, but you don't think that, like, they knew that in advance.
They totally did. They like anyone who was not at least thinking they let it happen is like
But it's their version of 9/11, though. It's Israel's
it is.
9/11.
Well,
Like
you
they
gotta
said
let it
it,
happen.
and
Like if I
we
wasn't
didn't know
on the next
either,
stop,
right?
like
You know, wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
yeah,
So.
didn't know about Pearl Harbor either.
I just want to see if there's like an Israeli version of the X-Files show, because if it was really a 9/11.
That is true. It would have already been telegraphed beforehand, like
Yeah.
Lone Gunman was.
That
So what
is.
do you guys think? Not to change subject, but we're talking about the end of the world, or you know, our fears about the end of the world or whatever. Do you guys at least think that the West has to be destroyed
Oh,
or
yes. Oh, yes.
crippled in order for us to advance to that whole new world order stage? You know what I'm saying? Like, to their main goal, we have to be destroyed,
In
right?
some
Do you
form
guys
or
think that, or
fashion, we have to be destroyed,
right,
yes. Now,
in
it doesn't
some
mean
way?
that it's all destroyed, and it doesn't mean that you have a balkanized United States with the, as me and Aaron have discussed, kind of like the greater Christendom states of the United States, like the glory states, and then the rest of the, you know, American Union is kind of like the liberal, you know, kind of ecumenic, you know, like ecumenicalist universalist, you know, states of the new age or
Right.
something. You know, I mean, that's quite possible. So.
Well, and it's no coincidence either that, like, the petrodollar, we all know that, you know, American currency is like the world's business currency, right? But, like, we also know that's diminishing super fast, and they're working against that to create, you know, a replacement, basically. At the same time, we know that the World Economic Forum and all these other nations are creating CBDs and central, you know, like Bitcoin, not Bitcoin in general, but just like a federalized version of that.
Token,
Right.
yes. They
So
call it
they got to
tokenization.
get rid of the petrodollar, the American dollar. What better way is it there to do that? I'm not saying an EMP, but I'm thinking more of like a cyber attack.
Well, that's the thing. It's
Because
going
it's
to be
all connected to
something
banking.
like a faux EMP. You know what I mean? Where it's like you could say it's an EMP, but it's really like a cyber shutdown, like it's controlled.
That's definitely probably
Because you
what's gonna
contribute
happen.
to
I put it at
blackout as well.
90% confidence, Aaron. I think
Because
that's what's gonna happen.
An EMP is going to fundamentally destroy the infrastructure. It's like you don't
Yeah.
just be like, oh, we got to just turn it off and turn it back on. It's going to wreck the electromagnetic properties of the conductive metals and stuff like that. So like you don't just, I mean, I don't know. I don't know a ton about this stuff, but I know it does more than just like knock it out. And
Right.
what I would guess is that, you know, again, there's going to be something like that. And when I mean, this is, I usually don't refer to dreams and stuff, you know, as kind of a proof text for things. But like, I actually had a dream. This is one of three dreams I had that I ended up in a death camp. This was about 8 or 9 years ago, where one of the dreams was like I was in Grand Rapids, Michigan, and the lights were off, and people were lining up in this government building to apply to get their electricity turned on, basically. So the government had taken over the infrastructure, and as they were being put in this building, they were being led into the roof of the building, so they couldn't just leave the building. And then you'd see a fence going up around the whole city of Grand Rapids, and that was you know, the kind of the end of my dream. And the city was getting fenced off into one big not concentration camp, but you know what I mean, like a quarantine zone or whatever.
Right.
And like, I've just seen enough people that are just like, yeah, power out. Like, definitely if the power goes out, it's going to come on in a very controlled fashion. And it's like, I mean, just from COVID, right? Like, can you imagine if they were just like, oh, you didn't get the vax, you're off the internet, right? I mean,
Yeah.
now imagine taking power away. Like, they won't do that because that will immediately lead to riots and stuff. You need to get your food and water, right? But if they do it in a short term, and then they're just like, oh yeah, we'll turn your stuff back on, but there's a lot of people we got to fix, so you need to go do XYZ to get in line to do it, people are going to obey. They're not going to be like, no, I'm just going to go put together solar and do it on my own. Like, nobody's that thick-headed,
So,
right?
ask you all this. Have they collectively gotten us to accept some sort of social credit score or some sort in combination with some sort of checklist, like you're mentioning, as far as using apps? Because I deliver for Uber Eats and DoorDash, and I know that through those apps and through Airbnb and through Amazon, even as early as Amazon reviews, right? they have us reviewing each other to be accepted in some form of future society.
I
And
think
so,
that's just creating an appetite for that level of, kind of, because ours is an economic customer service space, right? Where in China it's based on things that you have no control over that you haven't signed up for. Ours is all based on, getting customer satisfaction. And let's face it, like, do you put a review up if you have have a good experience?
Very rarely, but I don't
Sure.
really put up reviews anyway.
Yeah, and
Right.
but I mean, most are going to put it if there's a problem for the most part, and it's just not an accurate read. Whereas the stuff in China is just like, oh, you jaywalked, we're gonna, put the locks on you. There's
To
stuff
me, it
like,
seems like,
go ahead.
sorry to cut you off, but it just seems like to me, like the whole apps thing and the review thing, I think it's more like we were talking about proxies. It's almost like the whole review thing and all that seems like the proxy. What they really care about is all the data that they're collecting, about what you're eating, what you're ordering, how much carbon you're gonna, each individual is gonna emit, blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? It's all building up this massive data for this future
It's getting the free
hellscape,
market to do your
basically.
work for you. It's kind of like with Bitcoin and all that. It's like when that first came out and I knew people started inventing it, it's like, yeah, you can make a bunch of money on Bitcoin if you were there at the start. But immediately I'm just like, you don't know who made this. You don't know if they have a backdoor to it, right? And you're accepting a fiat currency whose primary economic backing. I mean, we've probably all watched our Money Masters stuff and our the bankster stuff, right, from the conspiracy theory times. And it's like, what is the common scenario? The reason fiat currency is valuable is because you can use it to pay taxes, right? So it's good for 20 to 30% of your necessities for your average person, right? So that makes it good for everything else. Well, what's the version of that that makes crypto valid? And that is black market trade of sex and drugs and pedophilia and all this other crazy stuff
Sure.
that we're all up in arms about, but nobody really does anything about, right? Well, you could, if you know that, guess what the quickest, like everyone's up in arms about sex trafficking, right? But then why the frick is Bitcoin still legal? And the answer is because they're creating an appetite in the market and the infrastructure for all these people who are building the tools to make that kind of transaction and currency fluid so that they can get rid of the dollar, right? And then they go to American crypto. I think John, you and I were talking about that. But so now that that stuff is close to being ready to go live, all of a sudden you've got one of the creators, the original creators of Bitcoin, gets caught with billions worth of Bitcoin. Like he stole a bunch, or maybe it was hundreds of millions or billions. It was a lot.
Yeah, it was like 110 million Bitcoin.
That he stole right off the bat. He was just living fat. He was flying his friends to Beverly Hills and giving all $10,000 to just have some walking around money on private jets and all this stuff. And it's just some stupid fat Chinese kid who's just like, yeah, I just wanted to get people to like me. And it's like, so that's what some kid has who wouldn't last 5 minutes in a prison, right? That's what
Right.
he does. What do you think the Russian mob is doing? And what do you think like is behind
Right.
all these other cryptos and stuff that came out and ETFs and stuff like that, where it's just like, I mean, come on, common sense is like some hacker says, here's a program, use it for your money. You don't think there's, well, there's a reason they allowed it, and they're letting, again, they're letting the free market build the infrastructure for it, and they have this checkmate they can use whenever they want, which is, hey, do you know this is funding child sex trafficking? We all hate that, right? Okay, so when that person pushes that through the White House or whatever, like who's going to be like, hey, no fair, right? I lost a bunch of money in Bitcoin. It's like, no, here's your buy-in. You can take 10 cents on the dollar worth of, US coin or whatever. But the point is like your average person's gonna be like, yeah, a bunch of people lost money, but most of them were bad, right? Most of them were drug dealers,
Right.
traffickers, and weapons dealers, and all kinds of stuff. And nobody is gonna look the other way. I just think that kind of stuff goes on. And like, I think it's naive to not be looking towards the future at this point, right? When, I mean, we've lived through, I mean, not all of us, but like collectively right here, we've lived through Vietnam and Kennedy and 9/11 and Y2K. And it's like, how many of these bullcrap schemes are they going to throw at us, right? Like, we know they don't just do this because it's like, oh, we never planned for a Kennedy, so now we got to get rid of him. Like, no, Kennedy served his use for what no, nobody went rogue. Like they use and dispose of different people, and there's layers of ideological development that's going on. That's really what's going on, because the big picture is we're drawing people slowly towards the eventual worship of the Antichrist,
Yeah.
and it's a Pavlovian experiment to get you there.
Well, and you're right on with that, because one of the aspects for that is there's got to be one world currency, one world religion, they're going to try and one world government, right? And so if they can get people to buy into this digital currency, then to slide it over into, oh, okay, it's like, think about like the EU, as miserable as that's been, but what if they did that financially? Oh, all of a sudden now we have this one coin for, or this one token or whatever for all of these nations. And then they start to just merge them, and the exchange rate begins to get balanced out. And now all of a sudden, yeah, well, some, are stronger than others, but when it balances out, it's all okay.
Right. And the thing is like, so I grew up in Grand Rapids. There's a lot of Christian bookstores there, and one of them was Baker Books that has a ton of used books. I'm able to go there and look at, like, Chuck Missler was writing on the stuff in the 80s and 90s, right? Like, this is not stuff that it's just like, hey, I think I'm starting to see where this is going. Like,
Right.
he worked for Rand Corporation. It was like a military think tank. It's like, whatever you think about, society and ideology and religion and stuff like that, like, technological futurism is kind of an inevitability. It's like, this is where this is going. And way back in the 70s, when they started popping the computer electronically for the first time, getting off of vacuum tubes, they're like, you know what we're going to do with this? We're going to figure out a way to put a human being's soul into one of these machines and make eternal life, right? Like, these guys were into that very, this is not like a recent Google thing. This is like a 70s thing. And Ray Kurzweil's been in it since then. And Chuck Missler's been following him since way back then, because he passed away in 2015 at, like, what, in his 80s or something like that. So it's like, this is all new stuff. And of course, growing up in the 80s and 90s, one world government, one world currency, that was like your baseline. Like, you didn't know anything about eschatology if you didn't know it was going there, right? So now all of a sudden we start going there, and people are just like, oh, that's never going to happen.
They forget. Well, they
Yeah.
forget, It's all prophecy, right? The word tells us exactly what this is gonna ha what's gonna happen, and he does it on purpose. He wants us to know, and I think that this is a tragedy of the American church in general, is that they've failed to investigate these things, to let these things be talked about. Like, I think, Aaron, you were mentioning, you're like, I've been kicked out of more churches or whatever. They won't let me teach or whatever. And when you start hitting on these things with accuracy, it rubs people the wrong way, because it pulls them way out of that comfort that they've been lured into,
Right.
and it's just a tragedy of the American church today.
Well, and there is such a, like, Rick Warren did a huge number by convincing people that if you want to grow a church, quit talking about end times.
Oh,
But the
right.
reality is like, common sense is like, if you've got a 30-year mortgage and the odds of Christ waiting 30 years from now, right? I mean, and these people, like, I went to a meeting where this was actually just last year. I went to a meeting where Nick Bajucic, you know who he is, the guy with no arms and no legs from
Oh,
Australia. He was there, and he apparently started a Christian bank recently. And I didn't know this about him, but he's been in investment and day trading and stuff like that since he was a teenager, and he's loaded. And he basically just started throwing numbers and stuff about the economic power Christians have, but their economic priorities are messed up. And he said, I think he said, I want to say he said 400 billion is what the US evangelical real estate debt is.
Debt.
400 billion.
Debt. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And I'm going, holy crap. He's not lying. Because, I mean, you take 1,000 churches with $1 million in debt, there's a billion. He's not lying. And I'm going, well, shoot, I was at a Baptist church with 600 people who was going to build a $3 million youth building, literally voting on this like the year before COVID hits.
Yeah.
And I'm like sitting here going, like, my spirit, the Holy Spirit in me is like, no. There was like one other lady who voted it down and got up there year before COVID. And she goes, now we're in a church where it's just like there's nobody between 20 and 30 there, which means your youth program is a failure, right? And you've been doing it for years. And this lady gets up and she's like, that's $15,000 per family. She did the math. And I'm just like, by the Holy Spirit, like, no, this is not. And of course, I didn't see, COVID coming, but I knew it's just like common sense is like, this is not the time to get people in a youth group. This is the time to get people saddled up to adults and learn that life's going to get hard. If you
Yeah, get them on the meat.
listening to the tea leaves tell you this next generation is going to have it tough, and you're not preparing for that in the church, like there's something wrong with you. And I look at that and I go, okay, now that 9/11 is happening, you get back, they're still doing it. They're still doing the building programs. And I'm going, you didn't get the wake up call from all of a sudden. Do you know how many churches are down to like 10 people of a church that like the church I was at in the UP was big enough to hold 1,000 people, and there weren't 200 in it. And I've gone to church after church after church where you just look around and three quarters of the people in there have gray hair. And I'm going, the church I
You better
went
go
to,
to Bethel, bro.
yeah, well,
This seems packed.
that's the thing. All the
All
young people are in the same
the
church,
cool kids.
right? But like the churches that actually have the money to buy the big buildings, I mean, the church I was a part of in Grand Rapids for like 5 years, it's like I walked in there when it was a Dutch Reformed church and they were all gray hairs. And guess what? They were gone in a year. Because it's just like these people are just holding a clubhouse of their tradition, but they've got all the money, but they were Dutch. And so the Dutch are cheap. Like, why are you going to keep financing this? And eventually it went away, right? Well, I mean, I watched this in Little Grand Rapids where you got like half a dozen mega churches. I mean, churches where like they build a mega church, they start holding concerts there 5 years later, 10 years later, they're selling it to another denomination because it didn't work, right? That if you build it, they will come, didn't work to bring the next generation in because a lot of Christian music's kind of lame, and it's like there's other reasons why your youth are falling away, right? And I'm down here in Phoenix now where there's like mega churches left and right, but it's like you go into them and it's like, yeah, you go on Christmas, it's full.
Dude, you should go to Driscoll's church, man.
Yeah, I should check. I should check it out.
Mark Driscoll?
But
Yeah, get a
there's
little Holy Spirit kick to the face. Isn't that
it's
the guy
like
who did that?
no, that's
Isn't
Todd Bentley. Mark
he?
Driscoll's the
Oh,
guy
Todd Bentley.
who taught
Close
you how to
enough.
have anal sex from the pulpit and turned the song of silence
What?
into porn and told you where to buy sex toys, all kinds of cool stuff like that.
Yeah, he's wild, bro.
I didn't hear that part about
He
him.
was a man's man, like deep-throated, bearded Calvinist, whatever.
Jeez.
These people are jokers.
Speaking of end times in the churches, though, Laura, like I have a question for you because, I think that, and as we talked about on our show before, I think that a big part of the end times that people overlook is the part that the NAR and Christian dominionism plays in moving society towards like this whole. And besides all the gloom and doom stuff, I think that they have the religious aspect of it, or at least they're a strong arm in that. So what part of the NAR and the whole dominionist theology like do you see playing into the end times?
Well, the way I look at it in my bubble that I'm in, where I just look at that all the time, it seems like everything. Now it's not just, I mean, there's definitely going to be a one world religion, but I always used to think of it as other religions, not Christians. But now I think it's a lot of Christian, with Catholic and Islam and all that stuff. But I mean, it's still going to take time, but they're already working on it, and they've been working on it. As long as we've seen history stuff about like the New World Order and the Rockefellers, all that crap, they've been working on the one world religion just as long, the same people building it. I mean, Aaron focuses more on Calvinism, but the NAR, they're completely paving, to me, they're completely paving the way for people to accept the Antichrist. And that, to me, is more of a imposter Jesus than a. Barack Obama or whatever. They're doing
Right.
every, I mean, they're, it's just, it's really, it's mind blowing. It still blows my mind every day. But I think that they are, the way that they're working it and the way that they've included patriotism into it. And you can say, oh, it's kind of new agey. It's completely, it is the new age movement. It's not new agey. It's the new age movement with some terms being changed and people being literally tricked. I mean, the people at the top, I think, are personally, I have to say, like John always says, allegedly, supposedly, I think they know what they're doing. They're not bad sheep. They are part of the plan, you know, to steer. I mean, it's so satanic because a part of it is just like it's mind control. I think that's part of it too, and that might sound
Guys like
crazy,
Rick Joyner
but
seem like they know they're up to no good.
oh my gosh. I'm still reading this book, but I mean, he looks like a spook, and now he's like, I'm starting to learn more about
I mean, once you
all
told me he was
that. And
Navy intelligence, because we knew
well,
he
he's
was.
wearing a hat. I
Well,
mean,
yeah, I mean, why? Bannon's Navy
and he's
intelligence,
telling,
Jack Posobiec's Navy intelligence, like.
but like the
I
rhetoric
mean,
of war has been, I mean, they talk about it in a supernatural sense, but the rhetoric of war, civil war, you know, white hats versus black hats kind of thing has been in their language since Branham, right?
yeah.
And I don't know if you guys have followed, have you guys ever seen AOC Network? Do you know who they are?
Yes, I did. We watched all those movies, the
With
two
the
witnesses and everything.
X-Men powers and stuff, like
Yes,
he gets witnesses as the church, like shooting lightning at people and stuff like that. Like I'm
yeah.
sitting going, dude, that's what the anti, that's what the false prophet does. Like, what? Where?
Wait, hold
Where's your?
on. There was a guy, there was a Christian group called AOC Network, and they were
AOC.
shooting lightning.
AOC Network, it's this channel, this
On
guy,
YouTube, right?
I mean, he's got a huge following. I'll bet you he's got 1 million followers now. He's this guy named Jaron something. I think he's from Detroit. And I've reached out to him when he first started because he's really good at like stringing videos together. He's got 1.1 million subs. And he was putting out a theory that was basically saying, you know, that the two witnesses are types of the church in Israel. And he basically he said, we're going to get X-Men powers and we're going to shoot lightning at our enemies.
Oh, we're gonna go. Okay.
Yeah, so I mean, this is crazy fans, but it's just another one of those channels who you know, is gonna block out any comments that aren't positive, just as a matter of course. But he also promoted the Messiah 2030 thing. He's probably single-handedly responsible for that spreading so fast. And you know, this Messiah 2030 sounds like it's messianic Jewish. That's what it sounds like in the channel. But they are definitely date setting Jesus Christ coming back in the spring or Feast of Trumpets in 2030. And I'm going, that's interesting because that's the earliest date I have possible for the Antichrist showing up. You know, because the earliest date Christ could show up is 2,000 years after his resurrection, based on Hosea 6, in my estimation. And that would put 2033 the earliest he can show up. So you've got 3.5 years before that, you're saying he's showing up. And I'm like, that's really freaking interesting. And I've reached out to both channels and they won't, you know, block your comments, won't respond. And just the program for this Messiah 30 and how fast it came out, how fast it got up to. I mean, if you look at this, I think they've got, it's probably got close to 1 million subs already. Maybe
Yeah,
not, maybe
it's
like 1 million views, maybe not 1 million subs.
no, they have 1 million subscribers.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a lot, and it's like, this stuff, the Messiah 2030, I mean, it came out in April, I think. And I watched it, and it was just like in a week, it had 50,000 views, you know, boom. I mean, thousands and thousands and thousands of views. And they're not mincing words about it at all. Now, I can debunk their calculations really easy and go, they're basically saying there's exactly 4,000 years from Adam to the death of Christ, and exactly 2,000 years from the death of Christ to 2030. None, all their dates are wrong. But you could literally take everything I know about timelines and prophecy and eschatology, and they have it all in there, to the point where I'm like, did you guys read my book or something? Because like I've never come across a channel that knew this much about typology and timelines and stuff like that, but all their dates are fudged. I mean, everything, like the creation of the earth, the birth of Christ, the death of Christ, they're all made up dates. They're and they just make it look like it's a crisp 4,000 years from Adam to Christ. 2000 years from Christ's death, 2030, and that's when the Messiah is coming. And I'm going, just the timing of this and how quickly it comes, because if you think Messiah is going to be here in 2030, we're in 2023. We are in the 70th week of Daniel. I don't think they teach the 70th week of Daniel, though. But it's like, it's like I've postulated for a while that there's going to be like a pseudo 70th week of Daniel, where you're going to have things, you know, kind of crystallize in the Gog Magog invasion, so that when that happens, people are going to say that was Armageddon. It's come and gone. Christ is here. And that's why Jesus says, don't be deceived when they say he's in the desert, he's in the inner rooms. He's saying like the Antichrist is going to show up in the Middle East, and then he's going to go in the Holy of Holies. Don't believe that's me, right? That seemed pretty central to what Jesus was saying. Like, wait for me to show up in the sky. That's who you'll know. You'll see it. It's not going to be like, oh yeah, it was here, it just wasn't on camera because the lights were out, right? Whatever this is going to be, it's going to be Christ appearing transdimensionally from heaven. Like, you were not, they could block out the cameras, we're going to see it. Like, I don't know how, but whether he's just sitting there, you know, bright in the sky, and as the earth rotates, everybody sees him, we're going to see him. And because that's what he said. He said, every eye will see me. So, it's like, go ahead.
Before you go move, because we're moving into a different thing, I wanted to go back to what Laura was saying, because you sparked a question for me. With the NAR, I've studied a little bit about them. I was actually saved in a very charismatic church and then left. But do you think that, because I hear a great awakening, they always talk about like there's going to be this great revival to come. And I also see I hear the same kind of mentality, but different language through these post mill, like these post mills that are like, oh, we're going to subdue the earth. There's going to be revival coming through. Do you see them merging, like joining forces?
Yeah,
I do too.
Yes. Me too. The thing that's weird with, at least in the NAR, to the people that I think get credit for starting the big revival, the billion soul harvest, which now makes me sick to my stomach when I hear it, because when I hear a billion soul harvest, I'm thinking for the devil, like he's harvesting souls. And it was Paul Kane and Bob Jones, two of those Kansas City prophets. It might go back further than that, but they often refer to them as the guy who got the vision for the, you know, football stadiums won't have football anymore. It'll be all Christians worshiping Jesus and the end times and all this stuff. And when you find out who these guys are and the kind of things that they did and taught, they are so, it's so bad. It is so, so bad. So I like to, you know, point that out, for instance, that this guy who was a pervert, who taught all kinds of crazy doctrine, if you know, the Paul Kane guy is super interesting.
Yeah,
because
I know him.
You know him?
You
yeah.
do?
He came to my church when I
you
first
knew
got
him?
He came to my church when I first got saved. Wow. I got saved in a Vineyard Christian Fellowship, and he came, so we sent elders to Toronto to, and this is why I left. They sent elders to Toronto to bring back the Toronto blessing or whatever, and they were having these services on Sunday nights, and people were just, you know, it was so out of control.
Times of refreshing?
What's
Did
that?
You have times of refreshing?
No, I had
Did
times
you have
of
times
get out
of,
of I had times of find the exit, and I left. That was when I left the church. I remember I was just worshiping, and I was a new believer, a young guy, and some guy ran down the middle of the aisle, and he turned around and roared like a lion. And I was like, oh, and I was like that meme with SpongeBob.
I'm out.
I'm going to head out. Yeah, that's me. So
unfortunately, that happened to me at our church. They actually sent busloads of kids, teenagers, some of them mine, to Toronto. And I thought it was weird, but I was dumb. I just didn't have the capacity to think that something evil was going to happen in my church. Like, to me, it's evil. It's demonic.
Yeah.
It's preparing vessels.
Like, does your audience know what Paul Kane was into, like in terms of the government stuff?
I did one video on that.
But
and
I'm saying like John and Jeremy's audience. Like, could you walk them through it?
Maybe. Oh, yeah. I just want to say real quick, just to add it there. It, on This is a side, but something we were talking earlier, I just wanted to before we get too far on Morningstar Ministries, Rick Joyner's ministry page. He has a question here. Why did I join the Knights of Malta? Okay, which is an
Oh,
interesting read
geez.
in of itself, because he's part of the Order of Saint John Knights of Malta down there in Florida, the ecumenical order. Okay, the Protestant Knights of Malta. Okay, which they sued the real Knights of Malta sued them, and they lost in court to the Protestant Knights of Malta, because the Protestant Knights of Malta, through some Princess Anastasia in Russia, were able, and it's all a whole just another discussion. But on here it says, and I quote, "I visited the island of Malta while in the Navy." So Rick Joyner really truly is a Navy man.
He's in your neck of the
Navy's
woods,
out
isn't he,
west.
John?
He is, yeah. South Carolina's not too far from North Carolina.
Yeah.
Well, go say hi. What are you waiting for? Go rebuke
I'm not going down there, though. No.
him.
Joyner's
You're
like,
not
I might
alone.
just
You're not going
disappear and
alone.
never be seen from again.
No, he
You guys
wouldn't do
have
that.
people intelligence.
Not him himself, but somebody there, maybe.
Now, wasn't he, didn't he consult Al Gore too? Like him and his daughter consulted Al Gore because he's.
Yes.
Yeah, on the whole climate change stuff. And he actually admits this. He taught them how, because he was in airline pilot, and he taught them how to use basically geological science or weather science or whatever to back up their claims. That's why
Yeah,
they're.
you know,
Thanks.
and it's
Thanks,
funny
Rick.
because,
Ted Turner's like a straight up pagan, like
yeah.
Deepak guy. Like, and he would brag about, oh, yeah, they hate most Christians, but they loved us. And it was like, yeah, because you're giving them propaganda to use against Christians. Of course they love you, you idiot. You know,
Yeah,
like.
well, what's interesting about that too is though is that the Knights of Saint John, the Knights of Malta, and the Club of Rome are huge on the whole climate change propaganda.
That's true,
Oh,
yeah.
yeah, because
It's and
so is
it's.
the World Economic Forum. It's like
Well, you've
they're
got
all
only a
that's their
few things.
cataclysm.
You got only a few things that you can use to catalyze the whole globe against a common threat, and that's going to be, you know, a pandemic or climate change or aliens, right? Like, and that's why they
Playing
pump.
all three cards right now.
Well, and that's why they pump those nonstop disaster movies down our throat in the 90s about like how a bunch of dorks are going to get together and save the world from some planetary crisis, right? Like Armageddon or like What's the Core or Day After Tomorrow, all these
Yeah.
different movies where it's just like it's a bunch of geeks who, you know, get together, but it's ultimately this world effort, right? And you know, all the greats are going to come together like the X-Men and solve the problems with science.
So let me ask you guys a question. Do you think that guy, because a lot of, I don't know if Jeremy and John, if your listeners know, Paul Kane is a self-proclaimed prophet. He's a false prophet, but he's a self-proclaimed prophet. He's probably old now. He's probably in his 70s now or older, I'd
He's dead.
imagine. Oh, he died?
But his
Yeah.
CIA stuff is like that freaks me out when you're just like, okay,
Yes.
true or false prophet or demonized or whatever, he turned the heads of the CIA, the FBI, the Clinton administration. He was sent to meet with Saddam Hussein. Like he was in the
Bibi
whole,
Netanyahu.
he was sent, he was in the whole
This is
mental.
some fa family and fellowship stuff. That sounds like to me.
Yeah.
Well, and
The
I,
vast right-wing conspiracy.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
that's the
He must
thing
have
is
been
like,
buddy-buddy with George Bush then, eh? Or the Bush family, at least,
oh,
because the
they.
Bush family also met with. Go on.
I'm sorry.
No, you're good. Go on.
You said the Bush. There, supposedly, this isn't a book description. This is a book that was written. I can't say I looked it up, the, official verification of it, but George Bush picked Paul Kane to be a remote viewer for the CIA.
What?
See, seems about right.
Interesting.
See, I mean, we're talking about the CIA. We're talking about New Age, New Thought. I mean,
MK
okay. And
yeah,
there were
whole human
there
spectrum.
were stories of him blowing out electricity, blowing out video.
Oh,
You
Lord,
know
how, I
how?
think I remember hearing about this stuff.
How
I
much
think I
demons
remember.
were in Paul Kane?
He
Like,
was
let's be
such a
earlier.
powerful prophet. Maybe he's a psychic. Maybe he's a has real like a real sorcerer, like John D.
Well, and we
He's
were
a
talking
John
about,
D. He's an
you
Alice
know, oh,
Bailey.
geez.
Yeah.
Guess who used to be his campaign manager back before he did all that? You
Who?
guys aren't gonna believe this. Chuck
Who?
Smith.
Break it down.
Wait,
Oh,
what?
really?
Chuck Smith, who started Calvary Chapel with Lonnie Frisbee.
Who was, I'm all
Wow.
right, so I was a Calvary Chapel pastor and I'm totally locked into them. So what's
Chuck Smith was Paul Kane's campaign manager before he started working at the non-denominational church where he met Lonnie Frisbee.
He was at a four square church.
Yes, that's what he was at a four square church, but he was serving as Paul Kane's campaign manager before he became his own settled
What
down.
was Paul Kane running for? What office?
Paul Kane was just doing a revival ministry in like Europe and stuff like that.
Oh, so he
Just
was just promoting it.
yeah, he was a campaign manager. I mean, he was, but that, I mean, that's how that circuit used to run, is someone would manage your campaign. Like, they would do the administrative stuff while you put on the show, right? They're like your manager, right? And then eventually that guy would get into it. And I think, I mean, obviously, if he was, brought up in Four Square Church, he was ordained, I think, there a couple of years after Amy Semple McPherson died. So that was probably where he was going, and then I think he shifted away from that
He
because it
did.
was all dominated by women, and they weren't really teaching the Bible, right?
Right.
But between that and then becoming the pastor that w in the church where he met Lonnie Frisbee, he was a campaign
Yeah,
manager.
I found it. I found it. Yeah,
So
yeah. It
it's just amazing what a small world this is, right? I mean, this revivalist circuit, it's not a ton of people. I mean, you're talking about between, I mean, there are probably a lot of people who tried and failed, right? But the big names, the guys who had the street cred between the 1800s and let's say the 1970s when it really switched to televangelism, right? You're talking about like not even 20 people. I mean, they all knew each other. They all piggybacked on each other's ministries to
Yeah.
get famous themselves. And the first one was Maria Woodworth Eder. And that started it going, and then that kind of folded into the Pentecostal denomination. And then the second one to get going independently was William Branham. But they're all built on those two's ministries. And then, of course, you have John Alexander Dowie, John G. Lake, and those guys. But like all the people who actually made a name of themselves, I mean, Oral Roberts, Kenneth Hagin, all of them, they all, like, I'm documenting this in my book, they're all popping up like one year after the other. It's almost like a guy starts to make a name for themselves and they see, hey, I could do that. And then all of a sudden they go from a struggling pastor at four or five different churches. And next thing you know, they make their million.
Well, a lot of it too is they'll be in ministry with them. So, like for instance, Chuck Smith, John Wimber, who started the Vineyard Church, he was a Calvary Chapel pastor,
Right.
and him and Chuck had a pretty bad parting of ways because John believed that the gifts were needed to be more of a front position of
Right, that's
ministry.
how we're going to save the world kind of thing.
Right. And Chuck said no, and we got to preach the word. That's what's growing this church. And then the Vineyard was birthed out of that, and so there was a lot of, in California, there was a lot of Vineyard churches and people going to Calvary Chapel Vineyards that were kind of crossing over.
Cross-pollination kind of thing.
Yeah. So you'll see, I bet you if you look in your history, there probably those guys were working in ministry with them. They maybe even were being discipled by them at some point or in some kind of, ministry sphere with them.
Right. And that kind of thing happens. It's like I went to a church that was more biblically sound, but like it was planted by the same church that planted Rob Bell's, Mars Hill Church. And same thing, people go back and forth and the ideas would mix. And most churches are going to err on the side of not trashing other churches, even if it's just like, yeah, but they're doing stuff that's definitely demonic there, So. I mean, I experienced that firsthand. I mean, these different healing ministries and stuff like that, they are very much guided meditation and spirit guides and weird crap. And it's the kind of stuff.
They make you take an inventory,
Oh,
like for
it's
blackmail
Scientology.
purposes.
It's the exact same thing Scientologists do. They just
And
go.
then you go into a healing room,
Right.
and it's like, I'm a former New Ager. How is this not New Age?
And it's
Right.
power control, and it's all about healing the mind so you can elevate to godhood, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
Getting
the
rid of
deep inner healing.
the Thetans or whatever, your little alien crawly crawlies that are inside your flesh or whatever. It's creepy, but it's like, there's never been a time that I can tell that the revive. And I'm not saying like there are sincere believers who just think this is it, right? Because I mean, you went through like generations of thinking getting dunked underwater and confirmed is what makes you a Christian, to going to no, having this emotional experience makes you a Christian, to going to now here, well, what do we do with the book of Acts? We're going to have the second blessing, and then it turns into eventually Pentecostal speaking in tongues. But the idea that, you know, well, we should be moving in the gifts of the Spirit, yes, but turning it into like a program of techniques, right, to heal people and whatnot, and everybody can do this. It's just a matter of having enough faith, or in other words, you know, feeling confident in yourself.
Yeah.
Like that stuff, there, it was never free from the taint of mesmerism, and it was always ripe for the New Age, because the roots of mesmerism is Rosicrucianism, as far as I can tell, and the roots of New Age is Theosophy, which probably traces back to Rosicrucianism too, or like which all traces back to the Alexandrian mystery schools and Gnosticism, and through Eastern Orthodoxy in Germany and Russia. That's where it is, right? And so like you look at this stuff and it was like, okay, so mesmerism is the science and Gnosticism is the theology. Like that's what it is, but it's the same worldview. And so like the mesmerists were doing their thing for a full like 50 years before Maria Woodworth Eder ever started doing her healing ministry, or like 40 years. It was like 40 years. But you had another guy, his last name was Evans, who was a Methodist preacher over like 10 different churches, and maybe 11 churches over the course of like 15 years. And, you know, because they do circuit riding, they just go church, church, church. And he starts a mental healing room based directly on Quimby and New Thought. And this is before Mary Baker Eddy with Christian Science. So, I mean, this stuff was circulating the Methodist circuit and got into the Keswick stuff. And then it gets to Kenyon, and it was the OG, and the late comer was Christian faith healing. I mean, it very much just piggybacked on mesmerism. And that's why everyone was saying it. And you can find Maria Woodworth Eder trying to say, well, this isn't that from the beginning. So I believe in the gifts of the Spirit. And this is something you got to stress, because charismatics don't know how to, they don't know how to distinguish discernment from cessationism, right? They think when you're challenging them to go, is this from God? Well, yes, of course, because I felt, I saw, I heard, and it's like, no. What is their doctrine that is accompanying it, right? What are they teaching you? If I were to sit under this person to be discipled by them, what would I learn? Are they teaching you that Christ can do all these things as he wills? And, you know, if you're open to the leading of his Spirit and his giftings, this may happen through you. Or are they teaching, follow me and give me some money and I'll teach you how to do this, right? It's that simple. And I've
Warren Buffett will teach you how to prophesy.
Right. Like, and I've never in my life, and I mean, raised in charismatic churches from childhood, never found a charismatic audience of people who didn't base that with hostility. You criticizing, like, where's this going? Is this, it's almost just like, I mean, the first pastor I asked about in private conversation, he had a guy into our church who was making Jedi Force lightning sounds and claiming to heal half a dozen people. I mean, like a line of people, right? And I was one of them. I thought I was healed of asthma, and that wasn't true, right? And within 2 weeks, my mom and sister questioned everyone in the church, and every single person that thought they were healed was not healed. And I went to the pastor and I said, why are you letting this as a Rhema guy? Okay. Why are you letting this guy come into the church and claim that all these people are healed and nobody's healed, and you're not doing any damage control to explain that? And he just says, well, in my experience, when you start critiquing and analyzing whether or not it's true or false miracles, they stop happening. And I'm just like,
well, Laura can attest to this too. I mean, they're you know, what they fall back on is, if you're not healed, they claim that you just didn't have enough faith to be healed.
Yeah. Right.
That's what they always fall back on.
And it's like, so, and I've had people tell me this in church, like, okay, like, so this is something that actually happened to me. I struggled with back injuries for years based on one leg being shorter than the other, and having a really bad back injury at work where somebody, I was working on, you know, construction materials, and somebody flipped something on me and didn't tell me I'm letting go now. And my back got cranked really, really hard. And years of just neck injuries and back injuries and going to the chiropractor again and again and again. And I had a lift in one heel. And then I just had a feeling when I was just worshiping in church one day that this is going to get removed. And like a couple weeks later, My knee starts hurting on the side where the lift is, and it doesn't stop until I take the lift out, and it turns out I'm fine. Haven't had these back injuries or stuff since then. So I was kind of sharing that with somebody to just give God the glory for healing me. No weird thing or anything. And I asked some people to pray for me, but no weird speaking to it or anything. And this guy immediately comes up to me and he's like, "Well, now you got to keep speaking to that. I'm healed, I'm healed, I'm healed." And I'm like, "Whoa, whoa, whoa. He's not, God's not going to undo the miracle if I don't keep telling it to be healed. It's healed. It's done. It's." And he's like, "Well, he might like it's there. It's so mind science. I mean, it's so hardcore mind science that these people literally, I mean, these are people who snot will be running on their face and they don't have a cold. They will not, you know, like they're so superstitiously scared of just acknowledging reality." And I mean, this is part of where my book's going is toxic positivity. It's like it's almost like the charismatics are like the magical version of it, and the reformers are like the rational version of it. Because it's not entirely reformers, but it's that whole church growth movement, Think and Grow Rich, Norman Vincent Peale, Robert Schuller, those guys, right? They're not charismatics, but they are espousing the same worldview. And one of the things I found recently, and I didn't know this, Charles Stanley, who most people would be like, "Okay, well, all the televangelists out there, Charles Stanley's at least sound, right?" Well, Charles Stanley, in his 2009 book, gives credit to the success of his ministry to reading Think and Grow Rich every year, and working on its principles. And I'm sitting here going, "Your ministry ended with your wife leaving you." Like, how is that a success? And it's just like he's on the same sauce as everybody else. It's just the cessationist version of it, right? But it's the same exact worldview. And it's
But
like this.
Aaron, do not touch God's anointed.
Well, see,
Come on.
you can't touch him with words, though.
That's another one. They love that one when you start to criticize.
So it's well, and you know who started that was Maria Woodworth Edder. It's like this one broad just comes up with all the doctrines that they run on, and it's like, where did she come from? Oh, she used to be a Disciples of Christ person, and she said she was anointed for ministry, and Disciples of Christ is like a sister church to Churches of Christ, and they're cessationist, and they're
So
pretty biblical.
when you like study the church fathers, and where do you start to see it go into that direction through? I mean, I know this lady's pretty proud, but she was like, what, 1800s?
Yeah, she was 1800s. I mean, the Gnosticism,
Augustine and up.
it's the Montanism where that came from, and that's the hard thing because Montanus and Priscilla and Maximilla themselves, you're talking late second century, like 170, 180-ish, right? Like Irenaeus talks about them. The Montanus himself and his two followers, I definitely think they were like cut from the cloth of your modern televangelists. I mean, they were collecting money. They were saying, "We're going to usher in the kingdom." They were calling it the new age of the spirit. Like they were saying the age of the father was, the Old Testament, the son was the New Testament. Now it's the new age of the spirit. And this guy was calling himself the embodiment of the paraclete, right? But like it was so easy to discern because literally, like he's being possessed by a spirit who is talking about him primarily as his, as its anointed vessel. So imagine, I've prophesied a handful of times in church since, my 23 years of being a Christian. But imagine if I started prophesying about Aaron and started talking about myself in the third person. Aaron's my anointed vessel for the new age of the, like, okay, that's a demon. Like, it's not that hard to discern. But back then, that was when the church was first getting into everybody be silent in the presence of the bishop and exalting the primacy of the bishop. I mean, that started with Ignatius 10 years after John died. And then it was really getting propagandized over that century because you still have people pushing against it in Origins Day, which is like 100 years later. So it's like that's the alternative, right? And so you've got now these crazy charismatics coming out. And all the churches believe that the end times was soon because their Septuagint Bibles had an extra 1800 years in them, right? And so, like, the Montanus after that, I mean, Tertullian joins the Montanus. Irenaeus is talking, he's mentioning them, and he's saying, okay, he calls them the Cataphrygians, and he's saying they think this and this and this is going to happen. And he's boned up on eschatology, so he knows this is false. But nobody's trying to really condemn him as a heretical sect because a lot of their followers are like a lot of charismatics today, right? They're sincere Christians who believe somebody is legit who's not, right? I mean, I watched, what's her name? Catherine Kuhlman, just because I'm doing my research. I watched a video of hers today and I'm going, I think some people are legitimately getting healed by her. I don't, but they're all doing the slain in the spirit fall down thing. Like it's in it and they're doing it automatically. Like she's not like they don't see it coming. She's just kind of waving her hand and it's like happening. And I'm listening to her talk about how like this and that is false and people like she's literally speaking out against people making baby sounds and claiming that's tongues and people thinking that they can teach someone how to speak in tongues. She's speaking out against that. But then in the same conversation, she says this is going to be the last generation before the tribulation. This is the last youth generation before the tribulation. This is 1972, right? And this is this these are her fans posting this stuff. And I'm like, are you listening to the false prophecy? Like, are you listening to her basically put forward the baptism of the Holy Spirit experience as a secondary thing to being born again? Like, that's false doctrine. And like, and yet I think people are legitimately getting healed by her. Like just in what I'm seeing with my own eyes, I'm seeing these people who are like saying I was deaf in this ear since childhood. I don't think they're faking it. If they are, they're really freaking good actors. And like, I don't know how to work that out. I mean, are these lying signs and wonders? Are these God healing Christians in faith? You see what I'm saying?
Well, that somebody said to me once, like, I think it was Ryan Peterson. I don't know if you know him or not. He's a big Nephilim guy, but he's like, how much heresy? No, it wasn't him. It was another guy. It was how much heresy keeps you out of heaven, right? Like that was the line, and it's like everybody had some bit of theological stuff that they hadn't, worked out, or that the Spirit of God hadn't shown them through Scripture or whatever. And maybe in her life, I don't know her or her ministry at all, so I can't really speak to her.
I think she's just some woman from in Minnesota who jumped on, felt called to preach and just jumped on what was normal on that day, which women preachers and the tent show revivals was normal. I think, maybe she was sincere, but like just wrong on some stuff, you know?
Well, I know she was connected. I think Chuck Smith was kind of endorsed her for a while too. But I and that's what I think it is. I think there are, I mean, God will use, like my favorite line is, God uses a crooked stick to draw a straight line. Nobody's got it perfect. Nobody knows it all,
Right.
right?
But then you have a Benny Hinn pop up who claimed he
Right.
soaked on her grave and got her anointing.
Right.
Like, I think he was a fraud from the get. Like, I think
Yes.
there's people like him and Branham who they know they're frauds. I
I
think
think
Kenneth Copeland
it's
knows he's a fraud.
yeah, it's important to look at like these people's mentors. Like for like a bad tree can't produce good fruit, right? Like, and you look at Todd White and his mentor, he claims to be Mark Driscoll and Kenneth Copeland. Well, Todd White's doing the exact same thing these two did.
Which is
You know, it's along the
kind of
same exact lines. I've never seen any one of them break out of this chain, unless you guys can give an example. But what I'm saying is like somebody who's mentor or somebody looked up to or discipled by who is clearly a false teacher, like Kenneth Copeland, Mark Driscoll. I've never seen anybody, down the line break from that.
And that's
You
the
know,
thing.
Benny Hinn pretended basically to repent. Or maybe he was sincere about it for a minute, but he went right back to what he was
Five
doing
times
before.
since the 90s.
Yeah.
He does it. He does it on the regular. It's just a thing he does to act like to get more attention on himself.
Yeah, it's like a sympathy thing. And then they're like, oh, yeah, okay, he's good. He's good. You know, he repented. And then he does the same old switchbait.
Because they don't know how to do anything else. I mean, these guys literally put on a magic show and say, give me some money. They haven't done anything else for 40, 50 years. What are they going to do? They're not living the lifestyle of a guy who makes 60 grand a year. They can't just get a job, right? Like
No, no.
they've got that credit card extended and all that stuff and the mansion and I don't know. Like I look at the money as a major thing. I don't know where Catherine Coleman was with money. She was very theatric. I mean, she just sounds like Charlton Heston talking or something like that, but like again, it's like I can look at my younger self and go, well, if you were to get up and preach, what would you sound like? You'd sound like the preachers you heard, right? You'd read the Bible, but you would, how would your form be? How would your style be when you'd preach? You'd sound like the preachers you heard. And of course, it's
Right.
like everybody had their local pastor, but everybody was listening to the televangelists and the tent revivalists and stuff. Like those were the ones that everyone wanted to emulate, right? And I could understand that. I mean, if you would have thrown me in a pulpit when I was in my 20s, I would have sounded like David Wilkerson because I listened to him a lot, right? And there are guys like Wilkerson that I'm fully on board with legitimizing him and endorsing him. But he believed in Pentecostal second, blessing of speaking in tongues. And I don't know if he's ever said that everybody needs what can speak in tongues, but they did believe like there's this experience of being born again and then the second experience of getting the Holy Spirit. And it's like, how do you think you get born again, dude? You know,
Right,
like
yeah.
the Holy Spirit, like one of them is just a magic transformation act, and but you don't have the Holy Spirit living in you. You're just a new wineskin walking around with no new wine in it. Like, why would you think that? You know, that's so weird because he seals you with the whole, like, I just don't get
Right.
it. But I mean, there are people who were good people who were into that, but what I see is the underlying root doctrines that drove the movement forward were false. And I mean Pentecostalism, I mean faith healing, all of it. And then I see a later hijacking of people who, okay, now it's ripe for this. And so that's where I think Laura and John, where you guys would talk about the externalization of the hierarchy, looking at this as like something that was always orchestrated. Because there was nothing preventing healings and miracles or anything like that in the church in the first place, right? It's just read the Bible and believe what it says, right?
Just
And
pray. Just pray and ask God.
you have
That's
examples of tongues and healings and stuff like that prior to these movements, but it becomes a technique-based movement of signs and wonders, and secondarily to the gospel, you know, I think after mesmerism. And after, you know, the onset of theosophy and stuff like that. And so I have a hard time not believing that it's just like, okay, well, how are you going to discern the true and false? Well, here, easily, the true comes from God and produces fruit unto God, right? I do see a certain level of, you know, God allowing things to happen, you know, and allowing us to experience things that we have to test. Right? Because he says, even in the Old Testament, I sent this false prophet so that you can, you know, and some of these false prophets are going to have signs that come to pass. And so that's where I'm just like, okay, well, at the end of the day, the doctrine matters more than the miracle, and
Right.
the fruit matters more than the doctrine, right? So you got to have those things going forward. And when you see people go from money grubbing to worse money grubbing to worse money grubbing, well, that's a pretty clear litmus to me, and it is a majority. I mean, there's none of these guys who aren't driving Maseratis and living in mansions if they can help it, right? They're not just living decent upper
Right.
middle class, right? They're living fat, you know. And I don't know. I just look
Well,
at that.
they have to. The reason they have to is because if they didn't, they wouldn't be showing that God,
Glory to God. Yeah.
showing how God blesses
What God
the.
can. Like Kanye, remember when Kanye said how God's going to show off through his billions and all that? Well, remember Mace? You guys remember Mace from Puff Diddy and Mace from the
Oh, yeah.
Mace became a televangelist and was working with Creflo Dollar and stuff like that. These guys know there's just as much money in this game as there is in the rap game, if not more, right?
Yeah.
That's why they did
Same thing
it.
with music. Yeah. Same thing with music. Exactly. Because like you'll see people like in every genre. Literally, they're not even Christians, but they use Christianese, they speak Christianese, they claim that they're a Christian band, and really they're doing it because the Christians are the one that's giving them the most money.
Right. They
That
use
fan
that.
base makes them the most money.
Well, and that's where I look at, you know, it's like, you know, it talks about the people who Paul's talking about the people who are his example versus those whose God is their belly. He talks about, you know, the fruit, the love of money being the root of all evil in the context of spotting false teachers. And that's where I'm just like, yo, like if you're monetizing the crap out of whatever your gospel message is, you're doing something wrong. Like if that's where your primary source of money, even Billy Sunday back in the day was making equivalent to millions preaching. But I think he was giving away a lot of money to charity. And I think Catherine Kuhlman was too. So it's like, if you know, it's all donation based. So if you're preaching, however you're preaching, as long as you're not doing deliberately false doctrine, I think we're all going to make mistakes. And you know, if you happen to get rich, but you're being generous with those riches, I think that's fine. And if you're somebody who lives a lifestyle of traveling and moving around all the time, then yeah, you deserve a certain level of comfort because that wears you out, right? So you don't want to like stay at Motel 6 and you know drive a crappy little rental and all that stuff wherever you go. But I mean, they do give a primary litmus of testing these false teachers as the love of money. And it seems like, yeah, I don't think the Catherine Kuhlmans of the world are pulling the strings. I think the Rick Joyners and Paul Gaines might be, right? But
You think that they're looked at like grandfathers of that movement, like kind of patriarchs?
yeah, well, so again, it is a matriarchal movement, and Maria Woodworth Eddard is the fountainhead. You could argue that this guy Evans and Mary Baker Eddy were doing it before her, but they were putting it forward as a science, as a healing science. But Maria Woodworth Eddard, John Alexander Dowie was definitely mesmerism selling it. He was an obvious fraud from the beginning.
So when you say mesmerism, you mean like hypnotic kind of?
Yeah, and it's a whole science. It's what it really is. You know, you have the emerging sciences of physics, and it's starting out with gravity and mesmerism in the 1800s. And once they have this science, like we know enough of this that we can conduct experiments, we can prove essentially forces, invisible forces exist, right? And so, based on that, what they start doing is they start bringing things like astrology and demonic, I think, hypnotism back to the fore as a science. And the first guy, Mesmer, who does this, I think he's like a Rosicrucian Freemason. That's what it seems like. He's from Germany.
Wouldn't surprise me.
And so you're talking, you know, this is it, this is within, let's say, 20 years of the Freemasons and the Illuminati and all that getting banned in Europe because of Napoleon, right? Napoleon overthrew Europe, and you've got a lot of evidence that like this whole Illuminati Freemason thing like really succeeded in almost overthrowing Europe, right? And so when these movements get banned, it's the exact same thing that happens in the Protestant movement. When the monastic movements get banned in Germany and England, you find the Freemasons popping up within 50 years. And it's the same thing when you know the Illuminati and the Freemasons and stuff like that get banned, you find Theosophy and mesmerism popping up within 50 years.
Do you think that this is a little bit off, but it just popped in my head. Because you had mentioned it earlier. Do you think that quantum physics and mesmerism have any connections?
Yes. So here's the thing.
Kabbalah.
How yeah, Kabbalah would be the connection, the bridge between those. But it, as long as you guys are cool with giving me a little bit, I had a long conversation on this with somebody who explained quantum computing and quantum mechanics to me just the other day, just 2 days ago, actually.
Yeah,
I mean,
you mentioned her.
So the way they're talking about this stuff, remember, it's all theory, and they know this. They don't have any tools or tests to actually make any of this reality yet, okay? The best they have is this massive, massive, ridiculously expensive Hadron Collider, which is conducting experiments with particles to try to essentially prove the math of some of their theories or the existence of certain particles that would make their theories more plausible. But they're never going to get to a place where it's like, oh, we have a quantum computer. That's sci-fi. It's never going to happen. And because what it is it's essentially there. It's computing that is based on like right now, computing is based on it's literally really fast Morse code. That's what it is. It's ones and zeros going really fast, which is basically the movement of electrons and the spaces between the electrons through in a conductive material, right? And you can literally make that material technically as thin as it takes for one electron to move across it, right? So that's very small, and that's why computer chips keep getting smaller and smaller and smaller. And you can do the same thing with light, which is what happens with fiber optics. And light and electromagnetic particles are not terribly different. Again, I'm not a physicist, so a physicist could probably tell me I'm stupid, but that's essentially it, okay? Quantum mechanics is essentially taking the mechanics of electrons and saying, well, wait a minute, if these electrons are kind of like never really in one place at one time, they're kind of like there's a mathematical pattern to them, but you can't be like, now it's here. Well, It's like they're somewhere in between a field and an energy and a thing, right? And it's the same thing with photons that are light. They're like somewhere between a field and an energy and a thing. And this is going to go back all the way back to the pre-Socratic properties of like, what is the fundamental building blocks of everything, right? And these guys are going to say it's water, it's air, it's whatever, it's light, it's fire. And I'm fine with saying it's all light because we're a god of light, and maybe he composed a space where he's not, and within that space composed elements of light. You know, and he's controlling it all, right? It's just compressions of light because he makes angels, flames of fire, and all this stuff. And I'm just like, okay, if you want to lay out, you know, analogous theory, I'm fine with that. Just don't get too religious about it, right? But what these people are doing is trying to take the binding forces and properties of light and stuff like that, and saying, well, we can manipulate those in the same way that we manipulate electricity on a copper strand, right? And get to a place where, because those move the way they do, it gives you more. It's like the difference between having ones and zeros and having four different proteins on a DNA strand. Like, how much more information could you pack into a small space, and how much more efficiently can you communicate? And if you can do that, how much smarter of a computer can you build? And so it is a theoretical. It's not using, you know, necessarily genetic material, but it's using the theoretical science between the binding forces of electrons themselves as a basis for a level of computing that would be similar to that in terms of upscaling, you know, the computing capacity. And so you are talking about, you know, theoretical, getting into God level science of computing, right? And then within that context, they have theories of time travel and things like that. Well, I'm talking to this girl about this, and she's studying this stuff, and I'm just like, okay, so she's smart enough to keep up with me. I'm relatively smart enough to keep up with her. And I'm like, what do you think of this? I said, what if everything that they're developing the science, because we know it's all theory, right, is just to the point of getting to the level of telling people that, hey, we figured out time travel, right? Plug in this headset, get in this pod, we're going to send you somewhere, and on the other end of it, it's just VR, right? It's time travel, or
The biggest dupe ever.
it's time travel, or you're good. I mean, you look at these movies keep coming out about like getting into the mind of someone who's like you in another dimension and all this stuff. And I'm like, you can do absolutely all of that with VR technology, and you're not really doing anything but creating a plausible scenario, right?
Yeah.
Well,
Well,
we're already
the multiverse is like huge right now. It's
right.
like,
And so this was going to be part of the plot to my original book that my Revelation book was written for, which is this Millennium Underground fiction, where they get all the people to go underground, and Elon Musk technology sets are all for underground and stuff like that. And then they orchestrate Armageddon basically to get all the world consolidated into a war on Jesus when he gets here, so they can collect the data and figure out how to fight back. And in the whole the like a major plot thread in this is these people think they've figured out how to save souls in electronic form and transfer them into new bodies and time travel and all this stuff. But the point is it's just all AI and computer simulation. You're not really doing anything. You're just playing a really good video game. And it's the same thing with avatars and stuff like that it's just like, okay, it's not really you. It's just a very good simulation of you. And those ideas are in all these sci-fi movies. Well, you get into, you know, Mark Zuckerberg and what is his name? Lex Fridman have an interview where they're playing with the metaverse where it is right now, right? And it's literally like two zombie heads floating in space talking to each other, and they're like, it's like you're right in front of
Yeah,
me.
it's
Like
trash.
they're seeing each other like we're seeing each other, but it's all VR, right? And Lex Fridman immediately goes to, all I can think about is wanting to talk to one of my dead loved ones. And the
Of
point is,
course.
it's like, you know, it's not them. You know, it's just a simulation of them if you were to do that. But it's in the heart of man to want to do that.
Yeah,
And
it's
what I think,
emotionalism.
yeah, exactly. It's what's his name? I talk to dead people. Like these guys would be on in the 90s, remember? Where they're like, oh, what are you doing? Oh, it's fraud. It's fraud. And they're like, well, we're giving people comfort, right?
Yeah.
And it's
Yeah.
like, Imagine when people start dropping dead left and right from World War III and from pandemics and just all the elderly people dying all at once, right? Because it's going to happen. Like, we're going to have a massive generation of just people dying of old age, even if they leave everything alone, right? And plus world chaos going on. And then they talk about Neom trading in the bodies and souls of men. Well, what if they're not talking about slavery? They're talking about literal bodies and literal souls. Or at least the realistic illusion of new souls and bodies and souls, right?
Did you say Neom, the
Neom.
line thing you were talking about
I'm
earlier,
saying
or the
Neom. Yeah, I'm
clone?
saying, like, what if that's what's going on there? And of course, you know,
It's
they.
funny you say it though, because their website says that they focus on health, like that's their main priority,
Right, like
while
figuring out
building
eternal
that
life.
city.
And that's what Jared Kushner said too. Jared Kushner
Yeah.
says we're going to figure out eternal life. And he said, either I'm going to be the first generation that lives forever, or the last generation to die. They literally think in this generation
Yeah.
we're going to crack the code for eternal life.
Yeah.
And so, like, either they're all deceivers and selling it to the idiots of the internet age, right? Or they are deceived and it's already been sold to them. And they think, like, I mean, this is the whole point behind Neuralink, is they think your electromagnetic activity in your brain is your soul.
Right.
And so, like I said, this girl I was talking to, she's a Christian and her mom teaches at a Christian school. Like, she just comes from smart people and she's just smart. And she's just like, no, there's like an intangible component to the soul that is something else. It's not just electricity. And like, yeah, I agree. But maybe the interface, it's like Chuck Missler, I think, described the human brain as basically like a computer a ghost can operate. Right. And I'm like, yeah, that sounds about right. Like, a ghost is a spirit, right? Like, we are a spirit, and you give up the ghost, right? But you don't, like, lightning doesn't shoot out of you and go somewhere else, right? It's something else. But, you know, the interfacing between that spirit and this body somehow gives off electrical signals, right? Well, they look at that and they're just like, yeah, well, that is you. Well, yeah, if you're carnal, that's what you think, right? You think the robot is all that you are, right? You're the robot, and the programming is all that you are. But you need to be fatalistic to think like that. That is how evolutionists think. That's how dialectical Marxists think. That's how Calvinists think, if I'm being honest, right? That's how
Yeah.
they think. That is their worldview. It just hasn't worked itself out into the sciences and stuff like that yet. But that's why they were always, and I mean, your Congregationalists and your Reformed people were always susceptible to mind sciences and stuff like that, and hypnotism. And again, they weren't into the charismatic faith healing stuff, because their academics that went liberal went materialistic, but they still believed in the fundamental plausibility of the sciences behind it, even though they had their roots in the occult too. And then, you know, the charismatics were just more superstitiously propagating this stuff. But it's the same thing. It's just two sides of the same coin. One is just saying, like, we don't know how we do it, but it works. And the other one's like, well, we think the science is principally sound. And they can't figure out their own circular reasoning that comes, you know, back to how their regeneration preceding faith is rooted in Gnosticism and Platonic philosophy, right? So how are they going to figure it out when it comes to the difference between, you know, real miracles of the Holy Spirit and, you know, transferring a human into a robot, right? Like, it's just not in their logical basis to know the difference. It's not in the way they think to know the difference.
Well, it also it spits in God's face and his promises, because we're promised a new body at the resurrection.
Right.
And
And
so
that's where I still have hope for, like, Calvinists and stuff like that, where it's just like, okay, most Calvinists are not that smart to intrinsically and integrally understand Calvinism. They're just adopting a tradition of people who are. That's why they're always talk about great minds and stuff like that. Like, people smarter than us have figured this stuff out, and I just trust them, okay?
right.
Calvin was like a 25-year-old, 3-year-old baby Christian who just got out of law school. Like, he's not smarter than us. He just decided to write a 1,500-page book because nobody else did, and you bought it, right? Like, he compiled the theories that were available of his day and wrote a logical paradigm, right? And, like, he was smart, but he's not so far above the rest of us that we need to be beholden to his genius. And they just, I mean, again, most people who get into ministry, I are not going to be the people who are going to build AI, right? Like, those are really smart people, right? And I'm saying these guys are pretty smart, But the guys who can figure out like how to make a machine act like a person is their next level intelligence, right? Like, and again, that even them, it's just like when you study the right stuff and go in the right direction and take the next step, it's still just human knowledge and logical processing and technology working its way forward. So it's like I look at it as like it's still going to boil down to the sincere and the insincere, right? Who's doing what they're doing out of the fear of the Lord, and who's doing what they're doing out of the belief in knowledge, right? Because it's this knowledge thing that got us into this mess in the first place, right? Like, I don't need God, I just need the right knowledge, right? That's the tree. And we're getting to the place where, like, okay, well, what is everything that God promised? Eternal life, living forever in eternity, right? And revisiting all your dead loved ones and all this stuff. And they're saying, well, we're going to give you that with knowledge, through technology. And that's all technology means, right? It literally means craft based on knowledge. That's what the literal meaning of technology. And it's like, that's interesting because, you know, the Antichrist causes craft to prosper, right? But the word he uses for craft is not the same. It's not techne. It's actually the word for guile or deceit. He causes deceit to prosper. And I'm like, yeah, because he's fostering the technology that allows for, you know, I mean, imagine if these guys who did the let me talk to your dead loved ones actually gets to show up with a picture of your dead loved one who talks and looks like him, right? Now that's power. Imagine if you had that in the 1800s. Well, the world is not that incredibly different from that. You still have people who think taking their picture captures their soul, right? And so, like, when they start selling this and people are grieving and mourning the dead, again, like, their root processing is going to kick in. And if they're not born of God, this is good enough for them. And I'm going, well, how did the X-Files end? Do you remember? The X-Files, the original series, ends with Mulder and Scully talking to a dead guy and getting help against the alien invasion that's coming.
No way.
Yeah, that's how it ends. It's creepy. And then you look at that spin-off show, like the new X-Files comes out in, I think, 2015, and it's all about how everything in the X-Files was a hoax, and there's going to be a pandemic that's going to launch
Yep,
in.
the Corona specifically. Yeah.
That's funny.
And yeah, and then they talk about one of their friends gets absorbed because the guys on the what's you even call it, the guys in the Lone Gunman show predict 9/11, right? And then they not only cancel the show, but they kill off all those guys in the next season, right? And then one of the guys comes back because he was in an experiment to get uploaded into a computer. And that's in the new stuff. And so it's like the stuff that's happening is like, man, it's like you build it all in the X-Files and then you roll it all out in real life. And you're just that blunt about it. And literally one of the episodes on it is a guy, he's literally, his name is Dr. Them, right? And they have this guy show up and he's hanging out with Mulder and Scully. And he basically is just like, do you remember me? I'm your partner, but they erased me from your memory. I'm so and so, but Dr. Them did this. Dr. Them. He's like, yeah, Dr. Them. Or is Dr. They or something like that. They, right? They're behind the conspiracy, right? And so he keeps talking about Dr. They and how he ends up being a guy who's escaped from a mental hospital who just watched a lot of X-Files stuff and imagined himself growing up with Mulder and Scully. And so that's why he's all weird like this. But then they meet a Dr. They, and Dr. They is literally talking to Mulder and Scully and basically saying how he's figured out a way to tell the world exactly what the government's going to do. And they still don't believe it. And I'm going, you can't get more in your face trolling, you know, everybody to go, yep, it's that transparent, and we still can make them think you're crazy if you say anything about it. Right. And I'm going, I mean, that stuff came out in that's th those seasons, I think, were like 2015 to through 2017 or 2018. And I'm sitting here going, it's almost like they just are like, okay, here's our next 9/11. Let's release some more X-Files. So it's like you can just set your watch by it, man. But we still live in a generation who thinks you're crazy if you connect those dots. And I just
Yeah,
think
a
that
lot of people are just,
I just
but
think
people
it's
are just so conditioned. They're
right.
so conditioned that that's another part of the plan.
And it's telling you how ripe they are for deception. So I just don't think you can get to a place where it's like, okay, this is. It's kind of like spiritual salvation and discernment is going to just outwork logic and evidence, right? Because the logic and evidence doesn't work. I mean, you can give people all the internet and all the information, and the cognitive dissonance just shuts them down. Like, they're just like, I mean, you literally
but
have.
That's always how it's been, Aaron. Like,
yeah,
the Holy Spirit's always the one that saves people. It you could debate them, you could give them every reason, you can show them, but unless the Holy Spirit works in them, then they won't respond. It's like he has to nudge them through, and you know, help them to see it.
Yeah, I mean, you got to get them to face their fears, is what it is, because it is fear that gets them to do it. But it's amazing how many people I've known over the years who are like right there tracking with me in Bible studies and stuff like that. And then the rubber hits the road, and all of a sudden it's like, I mean, I've had friends say stuff like, yeah, but I have kids. Like, it's like, so the end times can't happen because I have little kids. And like, I'm afraid to process what that could entail personally. And so therefore it must just shut down. And it's like, that's not one of the cards you get to play in this game. Like, the answer is, I mean, that's fine. If you're just like, I'm not advocating you like collecting bullets and water and freaking out and building a bunker. I'm advocating like being aware and talking to other people about it and using it as an evangelistic tool. And most people are like, yeah, but I don't, it's uncomfortable to think about it. And it's like, well, then that's the thing that's going on in your heart spiritually that you need to deal with right now, that the idea of Christ coming back soon is so uncomfortable. You don't want, I had a friend jump out of my car this year, moving car, because she tried to shut me down on talking about stuff. And it's just like, this person's been like complaining about not God not being trustworthy for 8 years. And I'm like, you have a bigger problem than I do. And you think I'm always talking about negative stuff. And I'm like, but I'm not the one who doesn't trust God. Like, I'm ready for this. I know it's going to be uncomfortable, but the Bible is telling us to be prepared to be turned into torches and used to let Rome. Like, it's telling us that. And other Christians have had to go through that. And we don't get to be like, yeah, but I never had a chance to get married and build a retirement account before I got martyred. Like, that's, do you know how many Christians across history that has not been an option for? Do you know how many people that's just not an option for, just because they're not 20th century Americans and like retirement accounts was never a thing, right? And like, I mean, people are freaking out. And I'm seeing more and more people that are like going either into sin or like, you know, rejecting people or, you know, putting the word forward. And it's not how you say it, it's that you're saying it. You know, for me, I'm going, I think God's just kind of pushed me through a meat grinder to get some of that junk out to a degree where it's like, okay, you're going to have a lot of rejection. You're going to, you know, be seeing a lot of crazy stuff. Nobody's going to listen.
Have you guys noticed, I don't know, like personally for you guys, do you guys know people that are like, cause I've, the last year has been for me personally and my family, it's been really hard. There's been, I know a handful of just solid believers that are just going through the ringer right now. Have you guys noticed people in your lives? I mean, I know Jeremy, you've had a lot going on.
Yeah, plenty, man, plenty. And I think it's one of those things, and I don't want to cut this short, but I got to go here in a couple minutes. But I want to say that I know it's not just me. There's plenty of people that I talk to who are going through similar things or even worse things than me. Mm-hmm. And to me, as hard as it is, and I wish that I was, you know, as strong as I portray to be, but, you know, sometimes I'm not, dude, especially when it's constant and not that I would ever lose my faith in God or my hope in him or anything, but, you know, I'd be a fool to say that it's not tiring me out and dragging me down. But in a way, you know, on the other side of my mind, it's I know that he's preparing me for something to come, because if I can't, you know, if I can't stay faithful through this, there's no way that I'm going to stay faithful when shit really hits the fan.
Right. It's like, if you can't run with
this, is nothing compared to what's to come. You know, these are my little problems in my life that just seem to come, you know, pile on top of each other. But dude, the Bible says that men's hearts are going to fail them for what's going to come upon the earth.
Right.
This is nothing. My financial problems right now, you know, this is nothing. None of this actually matters, and I'm trying to convince myself, because it's true. None of this actually matters in the grand scope of things. My mind is supposed to be focused on heavenly things, you know, and trusting God, and he feeds the fowls of the air and the birds. So I know that he's gonna come through. I know he's gonna provide for me. But as a human being, you know, that part of me that does worry, I feel like he's trying to purge me of that.
Yeah, me
And I
too.
feel like he's trying to, exactly. He's trying to purge a lot of people from the things that are bugging them the most, the things that they're worrying about the most, because there's way worse stuff to come and none of this matters in the grand scheme of things. You know, this is all temporary nonsense, really.
Right. And it's like it's still just showing you, okay, you've got room to grow, right? It's like I
Yeah,
look at
absolutely.
people, friends of mine who, the people that are just like, they might approach me for Bible knowledge, but I approach them for wisdom. You know what I mean? Like, how do you deal with this? I'm just went through another breakup. I just, went through this with my housing situation, whatever. And the people that I know that are consistent, it's like they never get mad. It's like, watching them like almost swear under their breath is the worst you're ever going to get out of them. And I'm like, I need
Then
like
you know you
ten
got to grow.
times that and like one tenth of the Bible knowledge I have, right? And I just
Right.
go, yeah, God's gonna get us all there, But if
Yeah.
like we're inclined towards research and exposure and stuff like that, He's also gonna use us in that regard too. But what did Solomon say comes with all that knowledge, right? It's miserable.
Yes, sorrow.
And like for me, I've had, I mean, I go through this once a week, okay, where I'm just like, what if it's not nearly as far off as you think, and you're not adequately preparing for your retirement? And the idea of going, because I've just turned 45, never been married. I sold a fully paid for house, and I'm renting from a guy down in Phoenix, and it's just like one of the worst places you could be in World War III. It's just like it's a desert, right? And I'm sitting here going, I feel like I'm where God leads me, and he's wanting me to do right now. But what if I'm wrong? What if 20 years from now I wake up and we're not near the end times like I thought, and I could have like been happily married in a suburb somewhere, or out in the country or whatever, like just enjoying that white picket fence life that I always thought is, it's not, I mean, yeah, it could still happen in the context of this, but we're heading towards the end times, so don't be planning for, 30 years of playing golf, right? Like that's not realistic. And it's almost like every time I get that way, I like hear another headline, and God just like is like, no, keep the end before you. Like,
Yeah.
I'm not freaking out. I'm not, jumping on a hill and picking a date and doing all this stuff, but I am like, think how few people are prioritizing. I mean, remember when like tracking the apostasy and all the conspiracies was just became this endless, pointless form of entertainment on YouTube. And like people who are actually doing it from a perspective of like the word tells us this stuff's going to happen, and it tells us to kind of take this stuff and scope it with the coming of Christ and with where our heart's at.
Right,
Right?
right.
And like I look at it as like, okay, well, this is a necessary calling for some in the last days, and other people is like, yeah, family, marriage issues sermons is their calling, right? That's legitimate too, because there are still people with family marriage issues. But the fact that it's like in the last days he says there's going to be these wise people who are going to instruct many, I don't care what anyone says or what they're listening to now, is like when it gets down to, okay, we just saw the sun turn to darkness and the moon turn to blood and the whole earth shake. Guess what? Nobody's going to Joel Richardson. Nobody is going to Jan Merkel. Nobody is going to Rick Warren or John Piper or any of these guys. They're not like, if we have any internet presence and we're not, in jail or, banned from the webs by then, like people are going to be like, who the frick saw this coming, and why are we not raptured, and what, like, so the sincere Christians, I mean, how look how hard it was for us to find each other, right? From years of probably looking for like people who are saying the things we're thinking on the internet, right? And I just look at it like that. It's just like, yeah, there really isn't that many of us. I mean, there was a time where I was watching a French Muslim channel because they were tracking everything that I'm seeing go on in Neom, and no Christian channels are. And I'm sitting here, and they're quoting the Book of Revelation and saying Sophia's freaking, like the harlot, and And this is like transhumanism stuff is the mark of the beast and all this stuff. And it's Muslim, it's French Muslim. And I'm just like, are you kidding me? Like, they can see it, but our churches can't. And like, I just see it as just like, yeah, that's part of the delusion. And there is quite a delusion in America because we're so rich, we're so comfortable. And we can't think of the idea of, I mean, we can't think of the idea of living how somebody has to live in Nicaragua for 6 months, right?
Right,
That
right.
to us is absolute hell. And it's just like, yeah, that's 3/4 of the world lives like that. Like that's, we can't conceive of it though.
Well, yeah, and I just think we are drawing close, and I think that he's pruning, and it's that John 15, and I think he's trying to prepare his church, his bride, and yeah, and I think the most important thing that we can have is just an understanding of the gospel, honestly. I think that is the most important thing we can have.
Right.
I can tell someone till they're blue in the face, yeah, this is what's happening, this is why this is happening, whatever. And yeah, God will use those things, but ultimately, until they understand their need for Christ,
Right.
it's nothing's gonna change. And I think that's what it boils down to. When I go through these trials, God's stripping away all these things, these other things, until it's just me and him.
Right.
Ultimately, that's
That's
what
the
it
inner
is.
beat. That's and
Right.
that's something that I keep coming back to is just like all the stuff you have right now, whether it's your body, your health, your family, your friends, whatever it is like everything is about preparation for you to return to God who made you. And really just, do you want me? Right? Am I enough? And it's like it is a huge blessing to be pushed to the point of going, no, I don't think God is enough if I'm gonna be asthmatic and get COVID and like or have a limp. Like I had a guy reach out to me and just had a physical ailment. And he's like, do you think I could ever get married because I have this physical and I'm of course you can. Like there's no disqualification. Of course you can. That's like your ability to run laps is not what makes you fit for to be a husband, right?
Right.
And like you realize how common that is to sit here and go, am I enough? And like the real question is like, is God enough? Right? I mean, that's like Nick. It's like God, he had to get to a place where he's just like, you have no arms and no legs. Is God enough? And he made the decision, yes, God is enough. With
Yeah.
no arms and no legs, and in tart started to turn his anger into joy, and from there became a millionaire and got a beautiful wife and kids and all this stuff like that. And it's like, what a testimony! But it was still the same question. It's like, if you have no arms and legs, is God enough? And the answer is like, yes, you have life and breath. So it he obviously didn't like drop the ball on you, like, oh crap, I went to take a dump and you came out that. Like, he doesn't do that. He's there intimately watching. It's like, and part of his glory is to hamstring people and then work his glory through them despite that. Like, or allow the devil to do it however you see it, or just allow natural deformities and things like that. And that is our God who he is, and he still loves us perfectly. And at the end of the day, everything in this world that says, here's what qualifies you, or here's what puts you at this level versus that level, is nothing. It's absolutely nothing. But do you know God
That's
loves you
true.
and do you trust in him? Right.
That's so true, dude. That's so true. And I appreciate that because it kind of made me look at it this way. Like, this guy has no arms and no legs, but yet he's probably better off than all of us. And it's in a spiritual sense, he's probably better off than all of us. I'm not talking about his money, but like, look how much God has used this guy who can't walk, can't write. You know what I mean? He's reaching millions of people. And I
Right.
don't know his doctrines or anything like that. I'm just saying from, what I know right now, I don't know if he's sound, but it seems like God is using him, and he's probably used him more than he's ever used me. You know what I'm saying?
Right. And that's the thing. It's not, I mean, he's a ta like, if he had arms and legs, he's still an Italian guy. He's an intelligent guy. He's a generous guy. All this other stuff that I didn't know about him because of my exposure to him was that ministry, which would largely center around him not having arms and legs. But the reality is like, he probably wouldn't get near the exposure to give
He
glory to
didn't.
God to so many people if he had his arms and legs. He would just be another
That's
guy
right.
who trade stock, even if he was a nice, generous guy. There's probably all kinds of guys like that out there, right?
As people, yeah.
And it's like if I had to go through this, for a time where it's just like God put a word on me for like, if somebody had to, it's like the you ever watch the movie End of the Spear?
Never heard of it.
These
What's it on
missionaries who
Netflix?
go to the jungles of Venezuela, and this guy ends up getting killed by the spear because these guys start a rumor that he raped somebody, and they guy kills him with a spear. And it leads to the guys accepting Christ because the Holy Spirit shows them something through them killing this guy, and this guy basically having a heart of forgiveness for them as they've killed him. And he this guy gets a vision because these guys have been running around in the jungle since Noah, and they're like doing revenge killings and stuff nonstop, and they think that's how they jump over the serpent and enter into eternal life. And this guy gets a vision, and he's like, that guy jumped over the serpent while he was still alive. And he just gets a direct revelation from God to go, what you're trying to do through your religion, this guy did, and he didn't have to kill anybody to do it. He did it by dying. And like God gave me a word to give to this church because how many Americans, and I stood up, and it was a small charismatic church, and I said, what if North Korea nuking us is what it takes for North Korea to come to Christ? Right?
Right.
What
Yeah.
if them nuking us is what it takes? Would you volunteer to take that nuke? And of course, you heading out, Turner?
Yeah, I gotta head out, guys. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it. And congratulations, Jeremy, on 50 episodes.
Thank you, brother. Hey, man, thanks for coming on, and I'll stay in touch with you, bro. I'm sorry I haven't replied to you in a while, but I'll stay in touch and we'll have you on again.
No worries. Thanks, guys. Love you. See
All
you.
right, love you, man.
Bye, Laura.
Nice meeting you.
Good to meet you too. I'll see you soon.
Yeah.
God bless.
Yeah, but anyways, I told this church, I said, God's putting this word on my heart that like would you let somebody hurt you if that's what it took for them to see Christ? Because that's what Christ
Right.
did, right? He sat there silent as people abused him, right? To basically say, I know you hate me, but I'm not going to respond in kind, even though you deserve it, right? And in our case, we deserve death, right? Not unlike Christ. And I just said, it was just clear as day. I said, well, what if I said, what do you think we should do if North Korea nuked us? And everyone's just like, go get them. And it's just like, but what if that's how we show them Christ? Right?
Look at
Like,
the early, wind on that note too, because look at the early church, man. Like when they were persecuted is when they spread like wildfire.
right.
When people started flocking to God, man, they saw their faith, their willingness to die, and people saw that and were so awe-inspired by their faithfulness to die for God as God died for us, and
Right.
then drew millions of people in. Now think about that on a bigger scale when there's like, cataclysmic event, whether it be a nuke or whatever, it's
Right.
going to be by our actions and what we decide to do in that moment. Not
Right.
only I, and that's the thing is that you should be doing it for other people.
Yeah, and I've been seeing God just working on just what my emotional response is or my attitude response is when I get ignorant or antagonistic or just, attack type comments on my channel, right? Like there's to get away from that, righteous judgment, quote, quote, right? In your response to get to like, okay, what if this person is just ignorant and your job is to help them see something they don't, and you got to have patience and not taking it personally what they're doing, right? It's like nobody gets really hurt when their 2-year-old says, I hate you because you took away their toy, right? And it's like, what if it like God's trying to get us to have that heart towards everybody without the pride of knowing that you're acting that many levels above them in terms of maturity.
Yeah.
No, it puffs up or it can,
Right. And but I mean just to sit here and go, okay, it when somebody lashes out to you in either a prideful or antagonistic or angry or hostile way or whatever, is your response for them is I want to help you get free from that, or is it I want to correct you and put you in your place, right? And
Yeah,
I mean,
right. Yeah.
he's just been inching me forward and getting there, and it's just like I can see that in the past year and go, oh yeah, I'm improving a little bit, but I still got a long ways to go. And he's like, yeah, well, you'll get there by the time I nuke everything and
Right.
kill
Right,
a
you
bunch
hope
of
so.
women, like, after everyone's starving to death and paying $100 for a loaf of bread, and like,
You're still debating doctrine.
right. We're still like, well, if it's not free trip, it's not anything.
Right.
We'll get there.
Well, thank you, man, for coming on. Laura, I just want to give you an opportunity. I know that you've been quiet over there. Is there anything else you want to say before we go? Any last words? Anything you want to touch on?
No.
No, just enjoying yourself.
Cookies.
We're
Cookies,
all
man.
listening to Aaron,
Bye. All
learning.
right. Hey, you guys take care.
Thank
All right. God
you.
bless you guys. Thank you.
Bye
All
bye.
right. Bye, guys. Good
All right.
night.
Bye.
Yeah.
Good night.
Thank you for listening to Buy Their Fruits. May the Lord bless the giver, the gift, and the receiver.